Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of the Hair Radio Morning Show is brought to you by Dr. Yolanda Ragland and our great friends over at FixYourFeet.com. Rugged Evolution Beard Care. Go to RuggedEVO.com for more details. StimulatingRoots.com, that's R-U-T-Z. StimulatingRoots.com is an amazing hair growth system. Smooth Black Ink, a.k.a. superstar stylist Mr. Troy Ballard. The new book release, Prestige, all about professionalism and the barbering industry. And, of course, all of us at Carapy, Hair Nation Expo, Road to Healthy Hair Workshop, our live hair events, and so much more.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hunt.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Broad Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Carry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapy Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
Somewhere, any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. You got a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs and finally see what it means to be living. See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says body's too old for working. Body's too young to look like his. My mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said somebody's got to take care of him. I quit school and that's what I did. You got got a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? We gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights, day out before us, and your arm felt like crap around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. Got a fast car. We go cruise and entertain ourselves. Still ain't got a job. Now work in the market as a checkout girl. I know things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter, buy a bigger house and live in the suburbs. I remember when we were driving in your car. So fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all our bills. You sell drinking late at the bar. See more your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. Take your fast car and keep on driving. So I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights stay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so you can fly away? You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women. And Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Vincent Ellis White. Now, he is an author of a book called Finding Chris, My Father. I'd like to welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Vincent. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
Yes, and well, first of all, and that's Vincent Ellis White, I want to make sure that's clear. Now, you are the author of this book, and I think it has such a very interesting subject matter that it deals with. Tell us about Finding Chris, My Father. What is it all about?
Okay, well, the book Finding Chris, My Father is a memoir that I wrote and published myself, and it's about my very intriguing story growing up dealing with fatherlessness. And to give you a quick synopsis of it, I grew up with a father that was a habitual offender, so he was in and out of jail. and there was he was definitely in more times than he was out. So I was raised, you know, like a lot of our other young African-American males, I was raised with just my mother in a single-parent, single-income home. And she used to take me to visit him 2 to 3 times a week at the prison, but she told me he was in school. And so I was a young kid. So, you know, when you're a young kid, you listen to your parents, and everything they say is golden. So, you know, I believed whatever she was telling me. She could have told me he was a unicorn. I probably would have believed it. But I thought he was in school. And, you know, my friends that read the book, they said, how would you not know he's in jail? And I said, well, you know, they're thinking I'm seeing jail bars, but I never saw any jail bars. I sat at a picnic table with him, and I'd be able to interact with him. I could touch him, give him a hug, you know, play basketball with him, met his friends and, you know, stuff like that. So in my mind, you know, he was in school, and that's what it was for a while. It wasn't until my, you know, adolescence, until I got a little bit older, that I realized you can't be in school for 8-10 years, you know, straight. You got to come out and be a doctor or somebody. So I knew something was going on at that point.
How did you feel when you realized that he was incarcerated? How did you feel at that point when you found out he was incarcerated?
And that's a good question, because I started to, as I stated before, everything my mom said was golden, man, because I never know her to, like, you know, fabricate anything to me. But that showed me that, you know, she does shield things from me, her son, and, you know, it also showed me that my dad, you know, was doing the same thing. And I started acting out. You know, I was smelling myself a little bit in my preteens and teen years. So, you know, just like how other teens do, I started acting up, you know, and not just acting up, but I had a lot of anger inside of me because of different things. I saw my mother struggling with one income. I saw him popping in and out of her life. You know, I had that lie that was told to me and all kind of other things that was happening that I just needed a disciplinarian in the home. And even though my mother was very, you know, strict and stern about certain things, there's nothing like that male figure being in the home. You know what I mean? And but the shocker was when I turned 16 years old, my mother sat me down and she said, Vince, she was like, your father, you know, that you, I know you know and love and all the other stuff. She said, I want to let you know it's something that's been on my heart for a long time and I've been feeling guilty about it. And she said, your father that you know is your father is not your biological father. And we got into this big, huge argument because I blew up on her. And I always had this big respect for my mother, man. But I never got any arguments with her or anything. That's how I was raised. But I blew up on her because I was like, first of all, this was a second lie. But then this was a huge lie because even though I had mad animosity for this man for different reasons, I loved him to death. I loved when he came around, when he was home. You know, I loved visiting him. And just all kind of things. So it just kind of put a whirlwind inside of my life, really. And I felt like I couldn't really trust anybody. I was asking her questions. She wasn't really answering them. She was more concerned with, you know, how was I dealing with that news. But, you know, I actually, after I got that news, I just started doing some different stuff, man. Like, I actually went and disowned his side of the family. And I was very close with them. Like, I spent time with them. Equal amount of time with them as I did with my mom's side, because even though he wasn't there, his family was there for me my entire life. But I disowned everybody, and my rationale was that they're not my blood. And I thought like I was the butt of a big joke, and like everybody, you know, knew the secret about me. I didn't find out until later that nobody knew. But I disowned the family, and I only was like really rocking with my mom's side of the family. Which I said, I know they're my blood because I know I came from her mom, you know, so the last name White, I was only rocking with that side of the family. And my family was mad at me. I mean, it was all kind of stuff going on, man. And I ended up...
Just to follow your story, what happened to your actual father then? Did your mother tell you at that time?
Well, that's what I was getting to. So I graduated from high school, went to college, and... So when I turned 21, I called my family and I said I was changing my last name. And that's where I got more news at. I told my mom I was changing my middle and last name. My name, my choir name was Vincent Lopez Mapp III. And I changed my name to Vincent Ellis White. And my rationale at the time of being 21 years old was that I knew the last name Ellis because my grandfather had that last name that I grew up with partially. and I knew the last name White was my blood, and I didn't look at the other side of my blood. So that lets you know I was going through an identity crisis. At that point is when my mom started giving me more information on it. I guess she thought I couldn't handle it until then, but she said, well, listen, you know, I already told you your family didn't know anything about the secret, but you've been so angry at your stepfather, and then now your biological father. And she was like, I never told him about you. And I said, wait, what? And she was like, I never told Chris Anderson about you, because at 16, all she told me was that my dad's name was Chris Anderson. That was it. She didn't give me any more information or anything. So then she told me she never told my biological father about me. So I had to transfer all that anger that I had for him thinking he was a deadbeat dad, like, elsewhere. So I was just acting out. But then I started looking for him as well.
And well, so, was your mother like a teenager at this time, like when you were born?
No,
this sounds like something maybe a teenager would do. You said 35.
No, 25. But listen,
oh, 25,
it's
okay.
It's funny you say that because you think that, but I work for the state now for the Division of Child Support Enforcement.
Uh-huh.
And you would be surprised how many mothers have done this same thing. Trust me, it's not a teenage
wow.
thing. It's not an immature thing, because I deal with mothers that are in their 30s that do it. It's a
oh, wow.
It's a family secret. It's an embarrassment, you know, type thing. So what happened in talking to my mother as I got older was my mom said that my biggest mistake was not telling your, like, me and your father parted ways and I found out I was pregnant. And she said, and I should have told him, but I didn't. And then I met the guy that you thought was your father, and he was telling me, you know, worry about it. I'll take care of Vince like he's my own. He ended up signing my birth certificate, so he gave me his entire name. But nobody told me.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
What a dynamic person, Anna. Yeah.
Right. So later on, my mother tried to tell me, but at that point, I found out that the person I thought was my dad started putting his hands on my mother. So he threatened her, like,
you know,
tell him my secret. So like I said, it's not just a thing of no immaturity, but it's like it was guilt. It was, you know, being physically abused.
Wow.
It was all kind of stuff. And
well, Vincent, this is a little bit of a different story too, because okay, so the gentleman that you believe was your father, who was supportive as he wanted to sign that birth certificate and actually be your father, unlike a lot of folks today, and then he didn't want you to even know that you knew that he wasn't your father. That really doesn't happen all that much. I mean, really, I know it. I mean, I haven't heard of it too often. We see the opposite play out every day on Mari Povich's show. So this is something that seems a little different.
Well, I mean, like I say, a lot of people are going to be very subjective with their opinions on this. Like, and I see both, especially me working with child support now, but I can see the good intentions in the beginning. I definitely see that. On the flip side, I don't recall him being such a great father, just to be honest.
Mm.
So, you know, because he wasn't there, I mean, for a lot of stuff, like even, you know, just giving me positive reinforcement and a positive role model. And that, those are attributes that a good, you know, father should possess as well. It was great that he stepped up, but when you step up, you got to step all the way up. You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree.
You can't get somebody your name and not tell them that you're not their father, but then you don't do anything. And later on, it's not only going to be a mighty blow when they find out that you're not their father, but it's already been a big blow because you haven't even been there. So what I tell people actually is I say, hey, not only was I dealt a mighty blow to find he was my father, but on the low, I was kind of relieved because he hadn't been there, and I was kind of embarrassed the fact that all my friends knew I had a father in jail. You know what I mean? So I was looking forward to finding Chris, but then at the same time I got disappointed because I thought Chris was trying to not be in my life either. Found out that he didn't know, and the beauty of
and
it all
that you had to go on was, you know, whatever your mother was kind of doling out to you in bits and pieces.
Right, Right. And the same thing. She didn't know any of his siblings. She didn't know any of his siblings or anything like that. And his name was so common. I like to share this one funny story. His name was so common that she had been looking for him to sign him for me because she saw the hurt that I was dealing with and having him there. And she said that one time social services contacted her back and said, we think we found him. And so she rushed down into the social service office, like, you know, hoping to find my dad. And she said, they bring out a white man.
Chances are it's probably
like,
not your dad.
Yeah, and so, but the funny thing is, they were trying to convince her, well, this fits your description. No, that's, you're missing something critical there. He's not black, he's not white. So that was the funny part. So, you know,
wow.
A name and all kind of stuff, but I don't want to give the whole story to the listener. They definitely got to get Finding Chris, My Father, the book, but I will tell you all, I ended up finding my father in the way that I met him and found
well,
him.
Well, hold on. Well, we're going to hold that. We're going to hold that for just a bit because I want to turn to your motivation for writing this book. And then we'll get into, I know, you know, that you do a lot of social type work now, but let's get into, so what was the motivation? When did you say, well, you know what, I've got to write a book about this? What was that motivation?
Okay, so
we know that you went through the story, but what was the motivation for writing this book?
You know, that's a great question because when I met my dad, I didn't write the book right away. I had no thoughts on writing a book. Didn't know anything about writing a book. And all of a sudden, I was, just sitting there and I was thinking about the crazy turn of events that happened when I was, meeting my dad and going through the whole thing. And so I'm like, I gotta sit down and try to jot this. And so I sit down, and I'm like, all right, let me sit back and try to, write this down. And so I'm like, I don't know the first thing about writing a book. So I just started writing it like old school, like how you write a paper in class. And I'm like writing the outline. I'm going off the top of the head and everything like that. And I start putting this book together. I'm telling my dad about it. And he's like, you don't know about writing. I'm like, but I got to write this book because I feel like it's going to help me be fair. It's going to be therapeutic for me. And maybe somebody else, but that's it. That's the only thought I had, maybe somebody else. It was more so trying to help me work through some things I was dealing with. And I wrote the book, and after that, I didn't even really push it like that, but it started getting in the hands of a lot of people, and people were like, I want you to come tell your story. Not only was I not a writer, but I wasn't a motivational speaker. Like, I was very outgoing, but I didn't do the motivational speaking thing. So I was, like, turning stuff down, but they were like, come on, come speak, and I would just share the story. But when I share a story like this, and it's my own story, I'm so passionate, with this thing that, like, I started captivating audiences, and people were standing up testifying, guys and girls, older and younger were testifying. The audience was growing, and people were, like, crying, and, I mean, it was crazy. And it was one particular time is when I realized it was no longer about me, and probably never was about me. It's probably just, for sure was God using me as a vessel. But I was in Newport News, Virginia, speaking, and this guy stood up with a hardened face, and he was like, I just got out of jail not too long ago, and I don't never stand up and speak in front of people, and I never cried in front of anybody. But he was like, you got me, like, in tears over here. And he was like, I don't know my father. And the reason I've been going out of jail and dealing with gangs and violence and anger and all this other stuff, is because I don't know my dad. I need a dad there. And then we talked. The whole audience was crying. A lot of people stood up and shared their testimony. And that day I said, okay. I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I said, okay, this is no longer about me. I said, this is about me helping other people. And I was so glad that I wrote the book at that point. So that became my motivation. Even though the book was already written, my motivation was now to uplift people that are dealing with fatherlessness. And it just so happened that same day, I met these two guys that said that they do stage plays. And I turned them down three times. I was like, I don't know anything about stage plays. But they kept pushing and pushing and pushing. They bought my book. We started working on the cast and scripts and doing casting. And I'm looking like, where is God trying to take me here? Because all I wanted to do was write a book for myself. And next thing you know, it's like I'm going all over the place traveling. I got a pending stage play. I knew I didn't have any money for a stage play, but we were like, we're going to put it on somehow. We put it on in Tidewater area of Virginia, and we had, a small response. I wanted to bring it back home to where I'm from, which is Richmond, Virginia. And I brought it back home, and no money to advertise or anything. And next thing you know, man, this thing just took a life of its own. Like, we sold our shows. People started donating to it, like nonprofit organizations started donating to it. Public figures, private donors. And we had money to make it travel. We got it on the news. NBC called me. CBS, ABC. I did two on ABC. And so I just started getting, exposure. And just started blowing up. And then more blessings were coming because people were coming up to me after my show saying, I'm dealing with that right now. Like young adults, it was older adults. To answer your question about my mom earlier, here's another example. I had some ladies that had to be in their 40s, late 40s, maybe early 50s, that came to me and said, listen, I have a son or daughter right now, and I have not told them about their father, somebody different than who they know. And, they were way older than my mom. You see what I'm saying? And I said, you haven't told
them?
Why not? And they tell me their reason why not. And so I immediately go in because it just hits my heart. I'm like, listen, you got to tell them. I don't care how old he is, 13, 18, 20. We go back and forth about it because they tell me their reason for not telling him. And I said, man, end of the day, it's selfish. Like, you got to let them know. And so I exchanged numbers with them, and they contacted me back. And, they contacted me back and said, since talking to you and seeing your play and reading your book, I went ahead and told my son. And, and they keep up with me. And, some of them have said, now my son is so glad. I told him he was mad at first, but now he's met his dad. And another lady told me he's met his family. It's just been so many breakthroughs and blessings from me sharing my story. To even going further, that's just a few testimonies. But they happen in the droves every time I have a stage play or I do a motivational speaking, to the point that I just knew it was no longer about me at that point. It was more so about the masses and the people. And, all the things that's happening nowadays in society, just the elevated incarceration and the violence and everything, you usually can send that back to a big factor being no father in the home. Right? They always, if you do the research and get the statistics, there's always no father in the home. So we can actually, I'm glad Obama has that, my brother's keeper and things going on, the Fatherhood Initiative, because that's where it starts. If we can fix that area in the home, a lot of this stuff will just get filtered out and it goes towards in a more positive direction. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I know exactly what you mean. I like when I've read that you referred to it as the father factor. So that's what it sounds like you were just explaining, but feel free to tell everybody exactly what the father factor is a little bit more.
Yeah, I call it the father factor, it's actually referred to as the father wound. But it is the father factor because it's usually the common denominator of a lot of these negative traits that people are possessing, negative symptoms, these reactions people are having. If you were to take any of them, one out of every three young adults has grown up without a father, especially in African-American communities, one out of every three. So we want to narrow it down to that. And there's no disciplinarian in the home. There's nobody for a male or female to learn from, a male to model himself after. And a female is supposed to give her heart up to her father first. If there's no father there, she has no male role model there, and therefore – if you look up the symptoms of a young female not having a father in the home, it's usually promiscuity, maybe not trusting men, or on the flip side, giving almost every man your heart because you're looking for your father. So things like that, not having a high value, high self-esteem because of that. And for males, if there's no father in the home, they may go towards gangs, they may go towards violence, they harbor a lot of anger like I did. They harbor a lot of anger, and they take it out in other ways. They may, have domestic violence on their girlfriends. So there's so many symptoms that all resort back to the father's factor and the father wound. And so I say wound because a lot of people think that it's just young people. But that's so incorrect. It's millions of adults that are out here, 30, 40, 50, 60, just walking around with a father wound. And their wound is that I never had my father at home. Whatever the case may be, some of them are still looking. I still want him there. I want to know why he left. Why did he put his hands on my mom? Why did he do this? Why did he do that? And they still need that answer. Now, if you ask them, they're not going to tell you that because they don't know how to express that. A lot of them say, I don't need him. I just need my mom. But yes, you do. You need him. And if you don't need him, you need some questions answered. Even those questions answered may help you. And so
it sounds like you're talking about closure for these the children of these fatherless homes, if you will.
And you still have to send it to adults with no closure.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, this is just interesting, I have to tell you. Wow. All right. Well, hold on. If folks out there, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have with us today, he's the author of Finding Chris, My Father. And it's a book out that speaks to the lack of a father in being in the homes, and I'm sure how it influences the children or the whole family, all of the dynamics, I'm sure. So this has been turned into a play. You started the trek to look for your own father, Chris, of course, which is the title, Finding Chris, My Father. We haven't gotten to the part yet about you finding him, so we're going to get to that in just a moment. But what led you to, or how did this lead you to the work that you do currently with the social work?
It feels like it was indirectly because I like to joke with people, tell them that I have so many different degrees and none of them go together and none of them are in the work that I do now. So I just feel like it's a divine intervention that I end up in this field because I have an undergrad degree in mass communication. I have a master's degree in education and I have an executive graduate certificate in business management. So none of the three are the same. And, you know, when you grow up, they teach you together and get your degrees in the same thing.
Right.
Now, fortunately, I was able to make them all work out now with what I do. But at first, I didn't have any degree in this field. And I was just working odd jobs here and there. And all of a sudden, I started mentoring part-time. And when I started mentoring part-time, the mentoring was just so fulfilling working with these young adults. And as you mentor, you know, you build rapport with them. I started noticing that none of the kids that I mentored had any fathers yet. Not only that, they were coming from group homes, foster homes. You know, some of them may have had a mental health issue or something like that. So I started, and it started just, you know, of course, touching my heart because it's what I went through. And, I took a full-time job as a life skills coach working with young adults. And all of these guys I worked with were great young adults, I mean, full of potential, but they had so much baggage. And it was that father factor. I can't tell you one of them had a father, to be honest with you. I mean, I remember them all. Or if they had a father, the father was putting their hands on them or you just being a horrible example of a father, and they were mimicking that. So I just started to really develop a passion for working with these young adults. And I said, man, it's crazy I don't have a degree in this, but I really want to pursue this. So I just started, I said, look, I just took it to God. I'm like, if you can get me, you know, whatever job I was applying to, I know the degree is asking for this. But I have this heart and this passion. If you can get me in an interview, I'll kill it. And I go in an interview, and they're like, you don't have a degree in this, but I have the experience. And I would get an interview, get the job, and I started working. I worked at the Richmond Department of Social Services. I worked as a life skills coach. I've worked as a counselor. I worked in benefits. I've just worked with youth and families for a long time, even to the point now I've worked at the Mayor's Youth Academy. The Mayor of Richmond has a youth academy for young adults to help them be on the right track. I was a counselor there. I worked at prison. I worked as a CO. I worked as a youth counselor in a prison. I mean, I've worked with so many different young adults and adults that all, as I talk to them and as I have counseling groups and sessions, guess what? The father factor is a common denominator every time. And I don't even mean for it to happen like that, but it's just a real fact in life. And so now I work for the Division of Child Support Enforcement, and of course, I hope you can guess the father not being there and is just a huge thing with the Division of Child Support Enforcement as well. And I want to be clear, it's not always the father, because we have plenty of non-custodial parents that are mothers, that are uncles, and, you know, aunts and everything. But just to keep it all the way real with you, though, it's the highest percentage is fathers not being there. And so I have a passion for it. So it falls in line with everything that I do. My degrees actually work now because mass comm is just all about basically speaking and communication. I do that all the time now with my work I do with my books and plays. You know, business, I have my own LLC that I do educational workshops. I sell books. I do my plays. So the business management piece is there. And then the master's in education, I educate people all the time. I work in, you know, schools and things like that when I speak. So now I've been able to tie all my degrees in together, which is a beautiful thing. Because that's something I was asking God for a long time. Now I'm able to tie them in together. So, you know, it's been great.
Well, I'll tell you, I like when I read VEW Enterprises, VIEW Enterprises, I would imagine. I love it. I thought it was such a great name.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yes, as an entrepreneur. Now, just to go back just a little bit, because I like this information that you've just explained about really the whole subject. But what I didn't ask you is that why do you think we have so much of this prevalent in our community where we don't have the fathers present in the homes? What do you think? I'm just curious.
You know,
on your take on this.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and it will be just that. It'll be just a thing, because I do not proclaim to have the answer, and I like to just have open discussion and awareness, because I don't have the answer. And I actually had somebody tell me on another interview I did recently, they were saying that it goes back to slavery. And I said, man, you know, I didn't even think about it that far back. You know, I'm only thinking about what I see and, you know, going back to what I've encountered and stuff like that. But it broke it down to me saying that, you know, go back to slavery and, you know, and the men being stripped away from the families and, you know, losing their sense of pride, things like that. And that was an interesting perspective. So in answering your question, it'll only be just a perspective of what I think. But so my answer to that is just that I believe that a lot of our men nowadays have not been taught and have forgotten what it's like to be kings and to fulfill our purpose that God designed for us. And I say that to say, you know, God didn't design for these broken families. You know, God designed for man and woman to be in the family and for the man to be the provider, the protector, and, you know, just the king in the home. You know what I mean? And I don't mean king in any type of, like, I'll rule everything, you know, you have no say type thing. But you know what I mean, just a king. Like, you taking care of the home, you making sure everybody's straight, the kids straight, you praying over the family, things like that. And so when men started to stray from that role that is designed for them, now everything breaks apart. Keep in mind, it's just my opinion, but I believe that everything breaks apart. So now you got these amazing women that have to step up outside of their role and have to play both sides. The woman now has to play father and definitely be the mother. So they're designed to be nurturing and do all those great things, but they're not designed to be the top provider like a man is supposed to be. They're not designed to be the protector like a man is supposed to be. Now, they do a great job at it, and they raise kings, you know, even like me. I was raised by a woman that did it. But the thing about it is like, imagine if it stayed like the way God designed it. Imagine if that happened. I just don't think we have a lot of these incarcerated brothers. I don't think we have these guys on unemployment and these, you know, guys in the project and these guys committing different types of crimes. If we had men that were stepping up and being who God designed them to be. And so that's where I am with it. I just want to I want to raise kings. I want to let these men know that, hey, listen, before you think you ain't nothing and before you think this all I'm ever going to be is, you know, whatever you're doing, this crimes or whatever, you actually are designed to be much more. But nobody told you. You know what I mean? Nobody set an example for you to know that you're supposed to be that. And the only way I knew it is that my mom told me and then my faith in God and matured. But I didn't have nobody to place my eyes upon and see that. You know what I mean? I had my grandfather that was there. He was a great example. So I think he helped too, but he died when I was younger. But I didn't have a father that was supposed to be there to say, hey, son, don't do that. That's leading you down the wrong path. Hey, do this, do that. Look at me. And, you know, so I don't think it's just fatherhood either. To go on a little different subject, I think it also is about relationships too. A lot of men can't really perform in the proper way in the relationship, and that's why we cheat and we do this and that. Because if we had that father in the home that not only did those things I spoke about earlier as far as protecting, but imagine if you a young man and you see your daddy treating your mom like a queen, like he holding doors, he, you know, getting her what she needs, he take care of her when she hurting, he talk to her, he communicate with her. He only has one wife, one woman. When you grow up, you're going to want to mimic. But on the flip side, in reality, we got a lot of guys out there not being home. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? They got different women that they're bringing in and out of their life. Sometimes even they tell their son, hey, don't say nothing. You know what I mean? So just keeping it real. So imagine you got that. That's what you see. Then you're going to exemplify that negative characteristic later on. And then you out here being a player just like Papa was. You know what I'm saying? So it all stems back to that father factor, but it's not just about fatherhood. It's about what example are we setting. And it's basically based on what our parents set. You see what I'm saying? So I
yes, completely.
Like
wow. Well, Vincent, I have to ask you. Now, if someone, let's take a look. If someone is going through the same situation that you've been through, and as you mentioned earlier, we did talk a little bit about this, but what advice would you give to someone now who is finding out that someone who they thought was their father now is not their father? Speak to that a little bit, if you would. Just what advice would you tell that person? What would the Vincent now say to the Vincent then?
That actually happened to me. So I'll give you a real example. That happened. I went to my alma mater, Norfolk State, in April. And I spoke on the panel, and I spoke about my story, so I didn't touch my father. And this kid came up to me. He waited in line for a long time, and he had a screw face on when he came up to me. And he started talking to me. He was like, man, your story is so real. Like, you actually have lived what I'm currently going through. And I had to elaborate. He said, I don't know my father, you know, and I just found out who he is. I found him on Facebook. And he said, I reached out to him, but he doesn't want to talk to me. And his face just got tighter and tighter as he was talking to me. And I said, well, first of all, I said, you got to release that anger that you got going on right now. He's like, I'm not angry. I said, nah, it's on your face. I see it. And so I said, you got to release this anger. He's like, well, he should have did this and this. I said, look, you know I know. You know I know. Because I was you at 16. I was very angry. And you couldn't even mention father to me because I snapped. And so he kind of loosened up, and we talked. And he was like, I don't think I need to meet him. I said, hey, I only reached out. I said, but see, this is the thing. You reached out because you do need to meet him. It's something inside of you that yearns to hear from him. I told him, I said, you know what? Your outcome may not be as great as mine was, just realistically speaking. I said, he could be a bum, or he could just be dead. He could be, you know, a regular guy. You just never know. But the thing is, you still need to hear from him and have that time to dialogue with him. Because of that closure piece that you mentioned earlier, even if you meet him and he says straight up, I don't want nothing to do with you, it's going to hurt, but you at least got an answer from him. Or you might meet him and he said, oh, my God, I never knew about you. You see what I'm saying? So when I told him all of that, he was nodding and listening, and it was breaking walls down as I was telling him. And he said, I never thought about it like that. I said, right. And when I was 16, nobody broke it down to me like that. But I now know, as an older gentleman now, I know that there's always another side to the story. It don't mean the side is great, but I'm just saying you need to hear from him. I said, listen, reach out to him, remove the animosity, find a way, whether it be, you know, pray to whoever you believe in or just go to a quiet place, but remove the animosity so you can't come to him with that because then he's going to turn away. And I was like, you got to also remember, too, he might be feeling guilty as well. Don't think he's just staying away because he's staying away. He might say, I messed up in the first 5 years, but now it's already been 5 years on. I might as well stay away another five because I feel so guilty. I wasn't there for the first five. I just said, see, you gotta ask him why. You know what I mean? You gotta hear the answer from him. And you know, he was against it at first, but as I kept talking, me and him exchanged numbers too. This is real story. And he kept texting me periodically to give me updates. But you know his most recent text? This is no lie. Hand to God. He said, Vincent, I just want to keep in touch with you like I told you I would. He said, I'm going to meet my dad at this next week or something like that, next week. He said, I'm kind of nervous, but I'm excited, too, because we talked on Facebook. I let him talk. I didn't come at him, like, in a negative way. And now I'm about to meet him for the first time. And he said, I would never even go to meet him had I not met you. And so my advice to young people that are dealing with this is that, you know, you got to face your fears. You got to at least try to have an adult conversation with this person, even if you're mad at them or whatnot. You got to just, you got to hear, have open communication with them. I think it's going to help as far as disclosure. It's going to help with their anger. And not always anger. Sometimes it's just confusion. It's going to help with their, those question marks floating around in your head. Who is he? What did he do? Why did he walk away? Why did he stay? And on the real, it might have been something, you know, your mom did. See, there's so many different variables to this that you can't just go on what your mom said. You can't just go on what your thoughts are. You got to get all the different sides. So that's what I
would
say.
Well, I think, sure. Thank you very much. Now, I think this is a great point for us to kind of go back to your story. So you had been searching and searching. You know, you were told that the person you thought was your father all this time was not your father, and he was incarcerated, this person you thought was your father, and you had all kinds of feelings of frustration for different levels and so forth and so on, and you found out your mother had told you what turned out to be something false a time or two regarding the person you thought was your father. How did it all come to be that you actually move closer to discovering Chris?
It was actually by happenstance. And, you know, this is kind of like the climax in the book, really, but it was like happenstance.
Ending of the book. Do not give us the ending of finding Chris, my father, because we want to pick up the book. So we're gonna park it when we get real close to that point, because I want to make sure everybody gets this book, including myself. I think it's a great idea. It's a great subject, and we'll talk more about it. But I'll let you finish because I really like this idea.
Yeah. So and I'll stop right before that. So what happened is, like, you know, I graduated from college and I'm just going on with life. Like, I go get my undergrad degree, I get my master's. And I'm doing what I call masking, which is where, like, I'm able to put on this mask like everything's fine. And, you know, it's partially going great, you know, career and degree and whatnot, but there's this piece that's missing. But I keep in mind, we had no information. So I literally didn't hear anything about, you know, a Chris or anybody at that point, from, you know, graduating undergrad till, you know, in my later 20s. And, I don't want to give away the story, so this is the part I have to stop at. But I will just tell you this. I ended up meeting him. But when I tell you the story, it's crazy. Like, it's just so unbelievable. Y'all got to get the book, finally. Chris, my father, I'm telling you.
Now, how do we get the book?
You can get it on Amazon.com. So you just go to Amazon, and, you know, you can type it, finally, Chris, my father. It's on Kindle and paperback. It's on a lot of sites, you know, it's on BarnesandNobles.com or things like that, but Amazon's probably the most popular place that everybody goes to. So it's there. You know, you can definitely follow me on social media because I update everything on there. It's links to the book, excerpts and play stuff. So, I mean, motivational speaking engagement. And so I'm on Facebook. My name is Vincent Ellis White. I'm on Instagram, Vincent Ellis White, and Twitter is Vince Ellis White. So definitely follow me on there, but get the book on Amazon.com, man. Find it quick. I guarantee you'll love it. I want to tell you, too, not only is it a travel stage play and God just keeps expanding my audience, but I recently had a Hollywood producer take a strong interest in it and option my book. And what that means is that they say they want to turn the book into a stage play. So my book has been optioned. Into a film. So my book was optioned to be turned into a motion picture. I'm still taking options, though. So, I mean, I'm always looking for another option to see what, you know, the best offer is and whatnot. But I was just shocked because I never in my dreams would I imagine a story that I looked at as a bad thing would turn out to be blessing so many people and creating awareness. But also, it can ultimately become a film which can hit the theaters and bless the masses and things like that. So it's just a beautiful thing, man.
It sounds like a very beautiful thing. And on that note, I have to say, what in closing might you share with the folks out there for whatever they're going through, Mr. Vincent Ellis White? What would you say to folks? Because apparently, and you've been dealing with a lot of families on so many different issues, and usually that's relating to this, the father factor or fatherless factor, if you will. What kind of advice would you give overall, or what's your closing thought on folks who are going through things these days as it relates to the family?
Yeah, no problem. My closing thoughts would just be, man, it's really about having hope and being encouraged and being uplifted. You know, man, life, I ain't gonna let nobody tell you life is easy. Like, life is tough. We go through something that we think is the toughest thing in the world, then 6 months later we go through something even tougher. So we got to have hope. We have to be encouraged, be uplifted. The thing that saved me was everything from my faith to having mentors. You know, I was in the Boys and Girls Club. I had some strong, positive, you know, male role models there. But now, even as an older man, when I get down, I can have positivity around me. So I tell everybody, man, no matter what you're going through, find some people, some positivity that you can just surround yourself with. It's like a big hug, like, and surround yourself with positivity. People that's going to lift you up. Because, you know, if you're already on the verge of breaking, you don't need to be around on negativity. I stay around people that lift me up. That will give you that hope that you need. You know, hopefully if you're a person of faith, man, just go to that, let that faith build and understand that, you know, whatever the enemy has meant for bad, God can turn around for good. And that's just really what I float on right there. Like, I always think about it. I'm like, oh, my God, this situation is so bad. And that's what I'm thinking about at the time. But then, like, a year or two later, I'm looking back, and it's just that situation turned into something so good. And I'm looking back like, you know, how did that even happen? But if I never had hope, I don't know that I would have got there. So anybody that's listening, no matter if you're going through your father not being there, your mother putting your hands on you, everybody's on drugs in your family except you, you don't have no money, no car, whatever is going on, understand that that's a valley. It's only for a moment. And that moment could be 20 years. But I'm just saying it's only for a moment. You need to have hope, be encouraged, and understand that you can and will get out that situation. Have faith and surround yourself with the right people. Connect with the right people, and you know you're gonna have a breakthrough and get out of situation. You're not designed to be in that turmoil forever, and so you know I believe that you'll all get out of it as long as you have faith and have hope.
Wow. Well, on that note, I want to thank Mr. Vincent Ellis White. Vincent, thank you so much for being with us on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Just your message. Getting out there, you are transforming folks' lives today. So thank you so much. And again, the book is Finding Chris, My Father. It's a play. It's going to be out there. You're going to be just, you can get it off Amazon.com and so many other places. And we're just so excited to have you with us. And we want you to come back and let us know.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
It's Smooth Black Ink, a.k.a. Troy Ballard. He's a superstar hairstylist with decades of experience. He's a hair industry icon with the Midas touch for styling, cutting, and all aspects of hair care. He's also a prominent educator who can electrify your workshop attendees at your hair events. Look out for Smooth Black Hair Care, products, and the amazing Troy Ballard across social media at Hair Radio.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air.
I'm Carrie Hines.
you're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details. All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It's Wednesday morning, March 31st, our show number 548. We have a lot of live talk on the way with our amazing contributors, our fan contributors, and much more. Here's a little bit of a little bit more of what you can expect to hear today. We have a very special interview that we are airing in just a moment. Ms. Tarsha Fitzgerald makes her debut on the program, so stay tuned. We've got a whole lot more of today's broadcast to go. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have a very special guest coming to us today. Her name is Tarsha Fitzgerald. And she is a promoter. She runs her own productions company. And we are so excited to welcome her to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Good morning, Tarsha. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, it's actually a pleasure to welcome you. First, I want to kind of jump right on in. I want you to tell everybody about Tarsha Fitzgerald Productions. What exactly is that LLC? I want to put that on in. So what exactly is that?
Thank you. So Tarsha Fitzgerald Productions is a media, entertainment, sports, and hospitality and PR agency company. Mm. So I specialize in media, which I have over 25 years of experience in media. I worked for CBS Radio, formerly Radio 1, as well as Clear Channel Radio and Fox 45 television networks. So I have over 25 years experience in the sales and marketing and consulting capacity of media relations. And then the sports aspect of it, I put together fundraisers. I work with a lot of retired, like NFL players or retired NBA players, and put together some of their fundraisers with their nonprofits. And I also help like Little League fundraisers because I have three sons. And they're all athletes, and I was a former athlete, so I love sports. And I, as well as I put together golf classic tournaments. So I've had two golf classic tournaments, and I have one coming up this year, September 2021. And my dad was formerly a Vietnam veteran. He was 100% disabled, lost his legs in Vietnam. So I had connected with a group similar to Wounded Warriors, but they're called in honor of our troops. It's a minority kind of disabled veterans kind of thing. And since I'm a daughter of a veteran, what we do is I put together golf classics. I did one like one every 5 years. So this is my fifth year to do another one. And I give scholarships to children that are pursuing a career in sports, media, or hospitality or entertainment, like, you know, from either you come from your parents or grandparents were veterans or a single parent household. And then also.
Yeah. Go right ahead. Also, I'm loving it.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. So the other aspect of Tarsha Fitzgerald Productions is concert promotions and production. Uh-huh. So I'm the executive producer for all of my shows, as well as I'm the MC and a host, and I do all the marketing. I do all the PR. I do all the bookings. I kind of...
You're wearing a whole lot of hats.
Well, when you work for a person like Kathy Hughes, you learn a lot.
Yes,
and you
true.
Learn a lot. And she was, I would say, she was my inspiration. When I worked for her, I was just like her. I was a single mom with one son. When I was working with her, and she admired me and I admired her. We work hard, we work smart, and we want to build our empire. So,
Kathy Hughes is for you guys out there listening who are not in the radio business or broadcasting, she is truly a broadcast legend and a woman of color. And for most of us in radio, Kathy just created the model for us. And a roadmap for us to kind of do what we're doing. And she has certainly influenced me. People ask, how did I, who were the folks I looked at? She's definitely at the top of that list. So I just wanted to make that clear to everybody. And I love your story so far. Tasha, I'm loving this. Please continue.
Thanks. So you now know why that I have to be very ambitious and a trailblazer and a shero and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So my passion is music. My passion is
really?
Sports. And my passion is media and passion is hospitality. So, you know, they always used to call me the life of the party. Even growing up doing family reunions or hanging out with the family or when I was in college, I'm the life of the party. So I turned it to when they say, you know, work your passion, I'm working my passion. So my job, because of COVID, I was director of marketing and media, and they shut down my job because we lost all our contracts because of COVID. So I just started, I said, let me do this full time. So during COVID, social distancing and mask style, I've done 2 outdoor events. You know, we follow COVID pandemic rules and regulations, you know, mask, you know, social distancing. And I've done it at a venue that has 10 acres. So it's plenty of space to social distance, stand by yourself, and board live entertainment there. And then also I'm at a few jazz clubs, which they only operating under 25% capacity because of COVID. And we do social distance and mask style, and you sit at the table with someone that you know. You don't sit with strangers, and they social distance. So during COVID, we've been able to still keep music alive.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is just awesome. Well, first of all, I've got to say, I'm just overjoyed. And we kind of pointed out, and I was just kidding, that you wear a lot of hats, but you really do. And I hope, after we finish our wonderful interview, I'm hoping you have room for one more hat up there.
we'll talk right after this
because I think it's just phenomenal. Your personality jumps out. It just goes right through the radio, and I just love it. And I know you've done a whole bunch. You continue to do a whole bunch behind the scenes, as well as be in front of the mic and doing all the different things that you're doing. And, you know, and I certainly understand being an entrepreneur when you have to wear a lot of hats. And most of us, we wouldn't have it any other way, you know, because you do. It forces you to be really cognizant of everything about your business and how to best assist folks with what their career goals are. So I'm loving this. And I'm loving you too.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very kind.
It's an honor. It's such an honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you. Now, I've got to say this. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. And as you guys know, particularly in our first hour, we try to introduce you to someone new and someone different, new to the Hair Radio Morning Show, I should say. You've got over 25 years in the business, so you're not new to Tasha, but you know what you're doing out there. It's my honor to welcome Tasha Fitzgerald to the broadcast. And again, Tasha Fitzgerald Productions, LLC, your own business out there. How does it feel, especially you talk about the great Kathy Hughes being an influence, but you yourself, I'm sure, have been a great influence to young women and others out there who are trying to make it in the world. How does it feel to have helped to create and carve a path for others?
It feels absolutely amazing. I'm actually going to be launching my book. I've been working on a book for 5 years.
A book?
It's actually, a book, a nonfictional book. It's a motivational book, and I'll do a book tour motivating young and professional women and women that maybe have to do a start over or, you know, get back up and, you know, try it again, maybe after divorce or after having children or after, you know, any kind of severe grief or something, significant trauma in their life, but to encourage women that you can still persevere. You can still, there's a second chance, you know. So my book, prayerfully, will come out. I was talking to a publisher yesterday. My birthday is July 19th, so my goal is to have the book by July 19th. My book was supposed to came out last July 19th. I was trying to have my book published while my mom was still living. My mom was my best friend. I just lost her November 11th of 2020.
Wow.
She was a breast cancer survivor and stage 4 kidney disease. So I just lost her, and I was her caretaker.
Wow.
So she was my number one supporter and fan. So I was like, I have to have my book out. And mainly, you know, and I would do speaking engagements, motivational tours, you know, just to let women know. Because a lot of women, they lose it, like after they get a divorce or after they became a single mom or any kind of trauma. Like my mom, she taught me to be really strong because her mom had an aneurysm when she was only 21. Back then, they didn't know how to, you know, cure aneurysms in the 60s. So my mom, she kind of was in college, had to drop out and go work. She went and worked for Johns Hopkins, where she retired from. And she wound up, where she had me. And just, you know, it was like, hey, without mom, what do I do next? You know, some women, you know, don't know. And then, her husband, my father was drafted in Vietnam. So, you know, it was like a lot of people don't know how to regroup. And now I really want my book to come out because of COVID. And just like I always tell people, music is my therapy. Everybody has their own therapy. But music, if I'm having a bad day, if I play Happy Feelings or play Yolanda Adams or any from gospel to R&B, jazz or pop country, whatever, one song can change your mood or change your feeling, how you feel. So I've been, my ministry is more so through music and motivating and helping others. And it's like I think I was put on this earth to encourage and motivate others. And with now with these upcoming artists, I used to always work with national artists, and I was always behind the scenes. So I had a mentor that passed away from a stroke, and I watched him for five days be in a coma. And he used to do all these. I used to be, like, behind the scenes with him. And he said, the week before he passed, he said, Tarsha, I want you to come to the forefront. You're so talented. You're the brains behind my show. I don't want you to be behind the scenes anymore. I want you to come to the forefront. And it was, and I just never could do it because when you work, I was always working, a career woman, and it's kind of conflict of interest, or you just don't have time to do it. You know, people call me for projects. And so I just started, you know, doing things, and then everything, it started being experience. My theme is the music, the vibe, the experience. And when you leave one of my shows, you're always going to have a takeaway, and you're always going to remember that experience. It's always going to be memorable. It's going to be unforgettable, and you're going to tell at least 10 people. And so
I'm ready to go to one of your shows right now.
I can send you. I had a show. I just had a show this past Sunday. I'm at the Birchmere, the historic Birchmere, which is located in Alexandria, Virginia. Anybody that is a music, you know, guru, the Birchmere has been in business for 54 years.
Amazing.
It's right there, 10 minutes outside of the, right by the White House. And I had a Barry White tribute Secret Garden experience. Harvey Hubert out of Kansas City and Keith Showtime Boosie Orchestra. So I had a whole orchestra behind Harvey and did the whole Secret Garden, the Quincy Jones Secret Garden with the four singers.
We recall that great song, of course, was the great Barry White. I'm just blown away that you're paying tribute to his great voice and the folks that were associated with it. Just love
This is amazing.
On Quincy Jones' birthday, and so happened Sunday was Quincy Jones' birthday. Look how good, you know, that worked out. And I didn't know. I was like, oh, my God, it's Quincy Jones' birthday. And so with COVID,
and I've always wanted to meet him. I've always wanted to. I had an opportunity. He wasn't, well, when they started, you know, Quincy started Vibe magazine. And I remember I was living in Los Angeles at the time. This was back in the 90s. This is how long ago that was. But Quincy, we had this big party at the Mayan in downtown L.A., and I was there, Billboard magazine, as a guest to Billboard. And I remember being at the event. We had all these big stars. Tyra Banks was there, John Singleton. They were dating at the time. That's how long ago that was. The Fresh Prince guy was there, and all these other people were there. Bill Bellamy, tons of folks. Jamie Foxx was there, and I had a chance to chat with him. But I didn't see Quincy Jones. And he was associated with Vibe when it launched. So that's why.
That.
Yeah, so that's why I'm like, oh, I've always wanted to meet him. Have heard a lot of stories, but haven't had it, never had that pleasure. So I'm loving what you're telling me, Tarsha Fitzgerald, this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Are you related to Gregory Hines?
Well, would you believe I do have a story for that, too?
I'm related to Ella Fitzgerald. They always
listen, let me tell you, and I take it as a great honor. My entire life, I was asked if I'm related to Gregory and Maurice Hines. So I've grown up being well aware of who they are. So one day I'm out hanging out in New York City. This is back a long time ago, long, long time ago. But I'm out hanging out in New York City, and who do I run into but Maurice? And had never met him before. So I said, Maurice, I said, so many folks have asked me if I am related to you. And at that time, Greg was alive. So I said, am I, you know, I said, so many people have always commented, am I related to you and your brother? And he said, you know what he said, Tarsha? I love this. He says, you tell them yes.
Oh.
That's what he told me. And so I told everybody. And so is that not an honor? So recently Allison Williams was on our show, a great singer here in her own right. She's popular and all that from back in the day.
I'm very familiar with that.
Oh, you know, okay. I'm like, I shouldn't have to tell you who she is. But yeah, she's just awesome. And she was just pointing out that she had run into Maurice and they are still doing. So he's still out there doing a whole bunch of things, but, not, related through blood, but through our passion for life and all things creative. So, that's my story. And I'm feeling that you are connected to Ella the same way. You know, so how is that?
Research that. I don't know, but she does favor my Fitzgerald family, and I just have to find out. My mother was trying to research that, and she used to tell people we are. And
Ella, have you ever noticed the story? She has an incredible story. I happened to catch a little bit of a video that was online, but. I'm wondering if you're going to give the big movie and TV treatment to Miss Fitzgerald that they have given all these others, because she's so deserving and that incredible voice. But she really has a great story. She really does, and it needs to be told. So that's something I'm going to have you, Tarsha, to kind of park that in the back of your mind. Maybe that's a project down the road. That'll have your name on it.
I'm thinking about that. I'm definitely thinking about that, because, like, I have an upcoming Aretha Franklin story tribute, April the 29th, and I'm about to do.
Really?
Aretha Franklin, and already Fox 5 contacted me yesterday. The email blast went out just yesterday. And they got it, and they contacted me. Yep, I'm doing Aretha Franklin. Coincidentally, I hear that she's great. They're going to do a series on her. So,
TV series that Cynthia Erivo is doing, and then there's the big movie project, of course, with the one and only Jennifer Hudson that is coming out as well. But I'm just blown away. Now, listen, speaking of great musicians and great artists. I have to tell you, Tarsha, because your company is working with an amazing artist that we've had an opportunity to introduce our live event fans of my Hair Nation Expo events that are held in Atlantic City, New Jersey, right on the boardwalk. And again, we're talking about historical context. We were the very first ever to have a hair and beauty show, especially for the community, on the boardwalk at the Showboat Hotel. So
wow. This
is our fourth or fifth outing at the Showboat, and it's an event called the Road to Healthy Hair Workshop Tour. So this is going to be great. It's hairnationexpo.biz event, and we're real
wow. Excited.
It's 3 days, happening Saturday, August 21st of 2021, so coming up in a few months, pretty much. And
I'll be there.
3 days.
I'm gonna be there. Well, I'll mark that down.
Oh, we're going to make sure that you are there, because you're also, you're bringing this wonderful artist, Don Connor White. And I want to just remind everybody, like I said, he was at our event back a few years ago at the Showboat, and he just killed it. He really did. It was a great audience. They were very responsive. He's an incredible singer. And so this is just telling me the type of talent that you are connected with. So I am
Don
excited.
He is absolutely just phenomenal. He is amazing. Just had him at the Birchmere, January 29th.
And how was
did
that?
Did a Teddy Pendergrass tribute with three of Teddy Pendergrass' original band members out of Philadelphia. So we gave that
my
Philly
home.
Down.
Let me shout out to Philly. That's my original home
Philly.
Now.
Philly's in the house. So
yes,
we did. Yep. We had Don Connor White as well as Robert LeGrand, they call him Wild Wild LeGrand, and we had a whole ensemble, whole band, and it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing, and we did a duet. He did a duet with Lila Jackson with Feel the Fire.
Okay.
Actually, that's who's going to be my Aretha tribute singer.
Okay.
He did a duet with Don, and they just lit the stage. And Don, he had that raspy, he sounds just like Teddy. But not only
yes.
does he just, the feedback that I got, we got emails, we got calls, the feedback, his whole heart and soul, his energy, it's just like Teddy. He mesmerized the audience. He's amazing.
Well, we're fans at Hair Nation Expo. We're big fans. He is incredible. He's a really gifted singer, and Tarsha is absolutely right. You don't want to miss it. He's going to be at our upcoming Hair Nation Expo event, which is called the Road to Healthy Hair Workshop, August 21st, 22nd, 23rd of this year, 2021, at the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City. There's more information about that appearance at hairnationexpo.biz. But I'm excited to have Tarsha because you are connected with Don Connor White, but also so many other folks out there and so working and just doing so many amazing projects. It's just really refreshing to talk to somebody who's so exuberant and has so much, like I said, passion for what you're doing. So I'm
Thanks
grateful.
So
and I love what you were saying about being influenced, about what your mom, her kind words, because it reminds me, my mother always said something very similar. She always told us to be strong. So when you said that, it resonated with my late mom. And so many similarities. I was just sitting here literally quiet because as you were just pointing out some of these wonderful things, it just really brought back quite a bit. So thank you for that. I just have to really say, I think we're going to be doing some great things together, Ms. Tarsha.
Yes, I'm excited. We are. Teamwork makes the dream work. That's always my motto. And
you
I
got
really
it.
Appreciate you taking the time out of
yes.
your schedule. I'm very excited about your upcoming expo. Excited
yes.
about
yes.
being a part of that. And I wish you much success. I love what you're doing. Hair and
yes.
beauty is so important.
Thank you.
I'm one of those. I love to look amazing for everyone because I MC and host all my shows. since I'm producing it. So you might see me do a patty. I might change twice on stage. I have different looks. They can't never recognize me. One day I feel like looking
Move
like Janet.
Over Diana Ross. Yes.
That's my idol.
We are
That's
loving
my,
Oh, Diana,
Diana Ross.
Yes. Yeah, she's
yeah,
just
they
awesome.
Call me Boss
Never,
Lady after that.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of all that music and all that wonderful stuff. So I cannot wait. So we can't wait to connect with you. Listen, Tasha,
exactly.
Before we go, any last thoughts, any shout-outs, anything you want to share with everybody? You are, you know, I'm calling you the queen of radio now, you know, with your amazing background. So you know all about shout-outs. Anything you want to share today before we sign you off today? Yeah.
Thank you. So, yep, if you want to, any upcoming shows, it will be on my website, www.tarshafitzgeraldproductions.com. And I am on Facebook under Tarsha Fitzgerald. For Jazzy Tarsha Experience under Facebook, and I have a public figure page, Tarsha Fitzgerald, and I'm on Instagram, T Fitzgerald, aka I am an Alpha Kappa Alpha, Silver Star. Yep, I am an Alpha Kappa, so I'm on Instagram as well, and LinkedIn under Tarsha Fitzgerald. And I just want to just leave everybody with this: follow your dreams, follow your passion, follow your vision, but don't forget to always help somebody. You go to sleep at night and you turn your, you know, shut your eyes and you say, did I make somebody smile today? Did I help somebody today? Because guess what? The blessings are going to come. They're going to come. But you are put on this earth to do a service. And it's, you know, and it's like, you never know. Just a little thing by complimenting someone or giving somebody like a cup of coffee or buying them lunch. You know, you don't know what their mental state is. You don't know where their health is. And so now, you know, especially times like this where we've lost a lot of loved ones, we've lost a lot of people, you know, it's very important to live each day like it's your last because every day is a gift. And I appreciate you, Mr. Hines. And
oh.
I'm looking forward to many, many more great things. And I'm excited about your Hair Expo. And,
yeah.
Hey, that's when together.
Awesome. Well, listen, I'm going to have you just to remain on the line, and we're going to go ahead and close this segment out. And I want to shout out to Mr. Lamont White, of course, for making all this stuff happen. And we are looking forward to just, you know, working with him and his amazing singing brother and everything that you guys are doing. Ms. Tasha Fitzgerald, again, Tasha Fitzgerald Productions. com is her site, and we will be following her career right here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. So thanks again for being here.
Thanks so much, Mr. Hines and Lamont as well. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Oh, you got
Have
it.
A blessed
All right.
One.
You too. All right, folks, keep it right here. We've got a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. Stay with us.
The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air live.
I do my hair, toss, check my neck. Baby, how you feeling? Hair, toss, check my neck. Baby, how you feeling? Woo, tired of the bullshit. Gone, dust your shoulders off. Keep it moving, yeah, Lord. Trying to get some new shit in there. Swimwear, going to the pool sheet. Come now, come dry your eyes. You know you a star, you can touch the sky. I know that it's hard, but you have to try. If you need advice, let me simplify. If he don't love you anymore.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Terry Hines. I have a very special guest joining us. Now, she's from the world of nutrition. The Hair Radio Morning Show would like to welcome Jackie. Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast.
Good morning. Good morning, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now, I do want to clarify, you're not just nutrition. You are actually all about healthy living. You have to tell us more about it.
Yes. I mean, I do like to cook, and that's part of the some of the things that I like to do, Jack Rabbit plant-based cooking. But I also just like to talk about healthy living as well. You know, I want to be able to share some things with your audience and, you know, about healthy living. I want to be able to introduce, you know, nutrition. I want to talk about exercise, water, sunshine, temperance, air, and rest. And, you know, just trusting in the divine power and how important all of this is regarding our health and our nutrition. So it's just a whole gamut of things, you know. Eating right, nutrition is the number one thing, but there's other things that we need to be doing that we need to incorporate in our lives each and every day.
And what are some of those other things, too, that we should be doing?
Some of those things that we should be doing outside of nutrition is, you know, we should be exercising every day. And when we think about exercise, we don't necessarily have to think about it as something like, you know, having a membership at a gym. It can be something as simple as walking every day, which is probably the best thing that, you know, we can do as far as exercise, you know, because we're stretching when we exercise, we're moving our limbs when we exercise, you know, we're getting sunshine, which is part of that, you know, staying healthy. We're going to intake some water because, you know, we need that hydration, and we need rest. And so in order to get that exercise in, we need to learn how to properly, you know, rest our bodies. You know, we need to
No, I was just, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yes. Well, what I'm getting from all of this, Jackie, is that for me, I look at making a big pizza pie. And each slice represents one of these things that you've just mentioned right here. And if you remove it, then it's missing a piece of that pie. It doesn't incorporate the whole pie. Somebody's ate a slice, basically. So you want to really start to focus on pulling everything together, and I think this is just awesome. And I want to back it up a little bit, you know, for our listeners out there. Let's just let folks know, you will be joining the lineup right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show, I'm proud to say. So it's really great to have you coming on board to share these regular segments on healthy living. And again, healthy living incorporates so much. It's not just one little slice, pardon the pun. You know, it incorporates so many things, as you've just pointed out. So, Jackie, I kind of want to back up a little bit. Let's kind of start with this. Tell the folks where you are based out of, How did you become a healthy living czar? How did all this happen? How did this all start for you?
Okay, sure. Well, I'm based out of Minnesota, and it all started back when I was probably 16, because 16 is when I gave up beef, meat, and I've always had an interest in healthy living. And so, you know, as the years go by and as you get older, you realize, you know, I need these things as a part of my life in order to, you know, live the best that I can in my best life. And so that's kind of how it all got started, you know, just me stopping eating beef and then just, you know, doing reading and just, you know, trying to cook and just live, you know, healthy. And
well, what made you give up the beef at 16?
Well, years ago, my mother had gone to a place where she was learning on nutrition and health. And so she came back and she talked to us about it. And I think I just decided, you know, not to eat beef anymore. I never was a big meat eater growing up anyway, because I just didn't like the texture. You know, some of us are texture eaters, you know, like, say, for an example, some people just hate tofu because it's just too soft. And so I just do not.
I'm raising my hand right now in case you didn't know that out there.
Right. So, you know, texture sometimes has a lot to do with things as far as why we eat things, why we don't eat things. But, yeah, so I just decided to give up beef and, you know, just reading things about beef and knowing that it wasn't really the best, you know, meat for us at that time. So I figured if I was going to start somewhere, let me start with the beef. And we never ate pork, so my next meat would have been beef. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is just interesting. So I find this really fascinating. And I think that the fans out there, and you guys, you'll be able to pass along whatever questions you have for Jackie, who will be talking about this with her Healthy Living segment right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show each week. Now, I want to be clear. So your 30-minute show within a show will be starting soon on our network. So we're going to keep you guys out there informed so that you'll know when to tune in. And until then, you can reach out to Jackie right through our Salon TV Network app here at Hair Radio, so which is just awesome. You can download the app at the Google Play Store, Salon TV Network, and you'll be able to connect with Jackie through that. Now, I'm excited about this Jack Rabbit Eats. So this is the wonderful healthy living segment that is going to be plant-based cooking. Now, Jack, I got to ask you, Jackie, what's the name Jackrabbit all about? The listeners would never let me live it down if I didn't ask you the name Jackrabbit. So what is that all about?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Carrie, because, you know, it's just my name is Jackie, as I mentioned, and I'm the youngest of six children. And so my family called me Jackrabbit. And so that was a nickname that was given to me by my dad. So when I decided to do plant-based cooking, it had nothing to do with the fact that rabbits, you know, they don't eat meat, and nothing at all. It was just fitting for the fact that I eat plant-based, you know. And so that's where the name Jackrabbit Eats plant-based cooking comes from. So it's just a family nickname, and I just incorporated it into what I like to do.
Well, it gets no better than that. That was just the divinity of it all. I just think it's amazing. It really is. Well, listen, I am excited to have you here on the network, as I mentioned. What would you like to see yourself bringing to this whole piece of the pie? And why did you want to come to our network? Share that with everybody.
Well, I just wanted to be able to relate a message out there regarding healthy living and just let people know that it's nothing, you know, really hard to do. It's something that, yeah, we have to try to do every day, you know, regardless whether it's eating right, our nutrition, whether it's exercising, whether it's drinking enough water or, you know, making sure we get enough sunshine, you know. I just want people to live their best life and live as healthy as you possibly can, because I think it's just very important for us as you know, as people in this world, it just gives us clarity in our thinking. It just introduces us to an awesome way of, you know, just being healthy and sharing that healthiness with others and, you know, and just being happy. And when we're happy, we want to share things. I mean, I do. I like to share things with people when it makes me happy and makes me feel good.
Awesome. Can say it no better than that. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much. Did you have anyone you want to shout out to before we sign off?
Sure. I want to give a shout out to my family, you know, my husband who has been behind me with this and who has encouraged me to go ahead and do this, Michael. I want to give a shout out to my sister, Alicia, who has also encouraged me to, you know, to step out there, get out of my comfort zone. And just anybody that I know, I can't call everybody by name, but just know that I love you and that if you're listening to this broadcast, I hope that it brings you inspiration and I hope it brings you encouragement.
It gets no better than that. However, it does, because you're also going to be doing a series of videos of cooking demonstration videos. Again, plant-based, I call it healthy cooking. It's healthy living segment, and you're going to be doing a version of this exclusively for our Salon TV network. So as long as you have our app, you'll be able to watch Jackie on camera leading you throughout your healthy living. And again, she's going to be talking about a whole lot of wonderful things, and we just so support you, and we look so forward to all of this. Again, I want to thank you for being with us this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Gary.
All right.
Just like the eyes are the window to the soul, the scalp is the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. The way to obtain it is with Stimulating Roots. Stimulating Roots will exfoliate and detoxify your scalp, promoting healthy hair growth. Stimulating Roots has a system to detoxify and grow your hair. Their shampoo combines menthol, camphor, and pink grapefruit essential oil to improve blood circulation in the scalp. Their conditioner, that stimulates, moisturizes, and hydrates the hair. The regeneration oil, that contains essential oils that work together to promote hair growth while calming an itchy, dry, and irritated scalp. Open the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. Awaken the senses to your scalp with Stimulating Roots. This is available at StimulatingRoots.com. That's StimulatingRoots, R-U-T-Z.com.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to RuggedEvo.com. That's RuggedEvo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
This is Dr. Linda Amerson from Texas, the owner of LA's Hair and Scalp Clinic. I am giving a shout out to Carrie.
I just want to give a shout out to the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines and his new team this morning.
Yay! All right. So in the morning, what do you do each day?
I listen to the Hair Radio Show, baby.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It is Wednesday morning. It's March 31st of 2021, and it's our show number 548. 548 as we march towards two more shows. We'll be at show number 550 on Friday. So we are so excited, and I've got to bring back to the line our amazing fan contributors. You guys know them well. They've been with us for a little while now. We're happy to bring on, he's a successful radio podcaster in his own right, Harlem Will Powers, from, of course, New York. So, Harlem Will, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to Hair Radio Show audience. How are you doing, guys?
All right. And returning, of course, to the line is a recent addition to the broadcast. She's doing just great. Miss Terry, good morning from Georgia.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
All right. So it's great to have you guys with us. And for the listeners, you guys just heard Jackrabbit Eats, where she's talking about healthy eating. And we were having a little conversation off mic about, some of our morning beverages. I said, well, gee, every so often I like to find out, are you guys a tea drinker? Are you team tea or are you team coffee? And so we were just talking about that. And, let's go around the panel a little bit this morning. Let's lead on in. What about you, Will? Harlem Will, are you a team tea or team coffee drinker?
I am definitely team coffee. I'm not, doesn't mean I'm opposed to tea, but I am team coffee all the way. A cup of coffee has done the trick ever since I tried it. I think, 15 years ago? Ever since I made it a staple of my morning, I've been using coffee ever since. Now I am a coffee head. Like, I like cappuccinos. I like to get tall lattes every once in a while, but usually a small cup of Joe usually does the trick for me all the time.
Wow. Okay. And what about you, Miss Terry? Are you a Java Joe drinker?
I am neither one. I don't have to have either one of those things. Sorry, Starbucks.
Really?
I don't need either one.
Really? Oh, my.
A cup of water does have just fine.
I don't have that either.
Wow. So what do you do? You don't need any. You just have a natural effervescence. You just wake up and kind of can snap out of it, snap out of things and get yourself in the right mode.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And just naturally dehydrated.
Wow.
Naturally
naturally dehydrated because I probably don't drink enough.
Wow.
Yeah. You might want to
I don't, I don't have to have coffee or tea. My mom was a coffee drinker, and I remember picking up her cups when I was a little kid, and I was absolutely turned off by the coffee. She was a tea drinker as well. I don't really have to have that, so I'm going to just go with Chick-fil-A lemonade.
Lemonade in the morning? And Chick-fil-A, so you got
to
get up super early.
I don't have to have it to wake up, but that's like my drink of choice throughout the day.
Oh,
but
okay.
No, I don't need anything to really get me going.
You don't have like a morning beverage. Okay. Well,
no.
I'll tell you how I weigh in as well. I guess I'm on your side, Will. I'm a person, I like tea. And I'm a specific tea drinker. I like Tedley tea, so I'm giving Tedley as a big plug here. But I only like it on occasion at night.
Do they still
as
make
a calming source? Oh, yeah, they do, very much so.
Mm.
It's one of the leading companies. And so I love Tedley's because I just love the flavor of Tedley tea at night. So that's my thing. Now, in the morning and the to give you that little burst of energy. I love my morning brew, so when I play this, I really do mean it. I really do. This is my coffee song. Drink it slow. Yes, indeed. And I really love that. Now, it reminds me, when you said you were drinking coffee for 15 years, Will, it just reminded me that I really didn't drink coffee either until I became a flight attendant and had to pour coffee 30,000 feet in the air to a plane full of strangers, essentially. So I remember that, and that's when I didn't even know how to make coffee until I became a flight attendant. I didn't know how to I didn't even know how to pour, like, mix drinks or make drinks. I knew nothing about alcohol or any of those things. So when you go through in-flight school, they actually teach you the service side. Of course, they have safety and all that other stuff, of course. But they teach you how mm-hmm. to make the common drinks that people ask for and how to make coffee. So that's when I learned, and I started drinking the coffee, which was really good. And if you've never drank coffee and you start drinking coffee, it gives you that certain boost and kick, and you're like, whoa, this is legal? And it is.
Yeah.
And you, yeah. Yeah. And I love coffee so much, I added it to my hair products. So we have Mocha Madness and the Carapi hair products of Kerry Hines Hair Care. That's my hair division. Yeah, so it's
caffeine in the products.
Absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of hair, it's a mm-hmm. stimulant for the scalp. Most of the hair products they use, like peppermint or, you know, things like that, and any of that would still work, truthfully. Even your fingers, as you know, Ms. Terry, these are ways that can grow and stimulate the scalp. My product is Carapi, and we've talked about it. I'll get a commercial on in a bit for you. But lots of good stuff. Like, I love all that kind of thing. So I was just curious if you were this or if you were that. So we'll, you know, have some things. I really had toyed with the idea of creating my own coffee brand. So I love coffee that much. Sure. Yeah, that's
have any of you guys tried the twisted tea?
I'm afraid to know what do they mean by twisted.
There's a tea that's called Twisted, and it kind of became popular after this video went viral. One guy called another guy the N-word, and he basically swung at him with this can of tea called Twisted Tea. And so
I did see that. Yeah,
I think I did see that.
Right.
It's funny because I saw a lady with a case of it the other day, and I was like, she loves that Twisted Tea, but I've never tried it. So I was just wondering, has any of you guys tried it?
No, that was about maybe a month or so ago. I think the video was just everywhere. That was where it just kind of came out of like nowhere with that tea.
Right.
That was sorry, it was fun. Yeah, that came out. That happened in December, and it has so many
we could have
solved it. They said we could have solved the insurrection with him and another guy who had went viral.
Exactly. Well, you know what?
With some twisted tea cans.
Exactly. And I hate to say it, but this kind of harkens back to what we're talking about. And the whole thing is he had to kind of unleash his own brand of the judge and jury. On this guy, and that's the kind of thing, because there's no accountability. Folks are just able to do whatever they want and be unchecked in America if you are of a certain persuasion. So we'll talk more about that, but we were just having a light moment. So I hate to take you guys back into the dread there on that. But listen, I do want to talk a little bit about what's coming up this week. Today is, as I said, it's Wednesday morning, the 31st of March, 2021. It's our show number 548 of our archives. We have like 547 other archive broadcasts. And then we have a whole cadre of podcasts separately from that on other platforms. So we have a lot of talk out there. And this Friday, we're celebrating that talk on our 550th, 550. When I give these numbers of the radio shows, I guess you guys have noticed, I have to pause because they're so high. I'm like, good grief. 550th show? Does anybody know anything they've done 550 times? It would be hard. You'd be hard-pressed to figure that out.
Wake up.
Okay.
Wake up.
Well, right, but you don't have a choice on that one, and that's a good thing. but anything that you've purposely done 550 times. So that's, you know, I will ask that question, and I'll let you guys think about think about that. Remember, we're on the air, and it's a family show. So, yes, 550. Yes, 550th broadcast. So this Friday, we're listening back. I think I have, I think I've got some clips on some of the highlights from the celebration. So here, take a listen. I'm going to leave you guys' mics on, and we'll talk a little bit about it following. It's about two or three minutes. Take a listen. The question that I'm asked most, I guess, is what inspired me to create the Hair Radio Show? And that's really quite an interesting story because it's really a two-part type question. We have the Hair Radio Show that was started 26 years ago, as well as the Hair Radio Morning Show, which has been around since 2015, which that's what we're actually celebrating, the 550th broadcast of the Hair Radio Morning Show, not the Career Collective, if you will. So what inspired me to create the Hair Radio Show back in 1995? I have to say, I was really out one night with one of my great friends at the time, and he's a gentleman who was the very first gentleman who was our very first guest on the morning edition back in 2015. Well, we were out after partying, and you guys know, a lot of you know the story, and I asked, what are you doing these days? And he says that, oh, he's a hairstylist. And I said, and he asked me, what am I doing? I said, well, I'm in radio. And I'm producing a show called, at that time, called Center Stage, which was a wonderful show that Cece Peniston herself was on at the time. And it was really great. It was all about helping, taking accomplished singers or entertainers and offering behind-the-scenes look at the industry. And they would come on and give advice to newcomers. And so the Hair Radio Morning Show is kind of like an amalgamation of that, as well as some other components. But I told him that I was in radio, and it hit me like a light bulb. And I said, oh, I think I'll create something that's called the Hair Radio Show. And that is how it began, because I thought that there were barbershops on every corner in the black community, as well as hair salons, and that was back in the 90s that that was the case. And I'll give you another quick anecdote about it. I did not host the original Hair Radio Show. How's that for a tidbit? The original Hair Radio Show, which began again in 1995 on WNJR in Newark, New Jersey, on terrestrial radio, by all things, was hosted by four hair folks. So I was the executive producer, of course, it's my creation. But I initially selected others to host the program, and they were just fabulous. We had hairstylists from all walks and natural hair folks, who at the time it was just a little bit of a different industry, and they were great. The only thing back in those days, in the 90s, you had to physically get up and go to a radio station. You could not, there was no really sitting at home and literally phoning it in. You had to actually gather everybody, and there were four hosts or co-hosts, and it was just too much. Logistically speaking, they were fabulous. And so I decided to just become the host of the show and kind of change the angle of it to more so a neophyte looking and seeking hair help, if you will. And that's how the show started. It kind of then was taken over by the professionals, and I'm shouting all of you guys out there because you've kept the concept of hair radio alive for over 25 years and helped to educate and inform so many around the world and about black hair. And I'm real proud of that. And we've got a lot to say thank you. Thank you. All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Again, it is Wednesday morning, March 31st. It's our show number 548. And kind of on the line with Harlem Will Power, as well as Miss Terry, who's down in Georgia. Good morning again, guys. And I kind of ran that piece. I didn't realize it was that long. That was just a quick reflection or recollection on getting the Hair Radio show started. Does anything come to mind with 550 shows in the can as of Friday morning? Harlem Will.
Anything comes to mind? Yeah, this guy's still going. How are you going to feel when you get to 650?
Right. Wow. Yeah. Still going strong, I should say, and even better, because the focus is always, as you guys know, this is, you know, we are always focused on improving the show, always. That's what we do behind the scenes. We're always looking for great guests. I'm always contacted. The wonderful thing about doing this for so long is that I'm contacted almost every day about folks wanting to be a guest on the show. So it's really nice now. I used to do all the reaching out, but at this point, we've been on for so long that people are aware of us, and they are, you know, they have reached out to us, and that is really nice, and we have people standing by. Ms. Terry, what about you? What are your thoughts on it?
I just think it's amazing just to be able to have, you know, the consistency and just get up and working every day towards 550 shows. It's just amazing. I just think it's actually, you know, it's a pleasure to be here along with you to be able to celebrate this this milestone on Friday. So I'm really looking forward to celebrating that with you.
Absolutely. And likewise, I think this is going to be just fun, and we're going to have a great time. And we really are going to, you know, give some more reflections, some of the behind the scenes with some of these amazing superstars who've been on our show as well. And when we say superstars, we mean celebrities, but we also mean folks from the hair community. We've had great stylists who've been on and shared so much information and help, you know, helpful tips and all of that wonderful stuff. And so we're real, real excited. And this morning show, which launched on January 5th of 2015, that's when this version of the broadcast launched. So we've been doing it for quite a while now, just, you know, as the morning show, in addition to our historical versions and editions of the Hair Radio show. So lots of good things. We do want to talk about some of the news items. And also, I'm going to put you on the spot right now, Ms. Terry, because I'm going to start delving into some of your wonderful hair talk with you on the air. So we'll be able to get into some of that likely when we come back from our break. So after Friday, we'll be off for about a week, but you guys will be treated to some of our amazing replays. So all week you'll be able to listen online between 6 and 9 to some of the best of shows. So we won't be here live, but you'll be able to listen to the shows the same time, but you'll be able to, you won't be able to dial in and listen. You'll have to click online in order to hear those, but they will be scheduled between 6 and 9 all week starting next Monday. So we're going to finish out this week on Friday, which is the 2nd of April, just one day before Will marks his, what should we say, 75th birthday, Harlem Will?
78.
That's it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to be celebrating. Friday is not just our 550th, but we'll be celebrating Will's birthday as well. Your birthday is that Saturday, is this Saturday, so how awesome is that? Any big plans so far?
A lot of big plans as far as spending it with family, and I think for the first time in a long time, because I didn't get a chance to do it last year, I'm actually going to go out to a restaurant or a bar and just relax. I'm going to wear my mask. I still will be practicing social distancing, but since the restaurants are open, I'm going to get back to doing something normal and go out to a restaurant and celebrate.
Wow. Well, Miss Terry, have you been in a restaurant since all of this happened?
No.
You haven't? Wow.
No, I have not.
Okay, well, I have. I just, you guys know, I was saying that I think you might have seen some of my pictures recently where I went to Manhattan for the very first time in over a year. Now, Will, you know this. You know where Brooklyn is. And just not to get on a train and go to, you know, a few stops into Manhattan that's how crazy this has been. So I've only stayed in the borough of Brooklyn for a whole year until this past Sunday. I think it was Saturday. Actually it was this past Sunday. I finally made it into New York, into Manhattan. And it was shocking. So it just brings back when you said about going to the restaurant, that was the first time I got on a train and went that far in a year. And also we went to Dave and Buster's restaurant in Midtown and 42nd Street. And it was just great. And it was nice to see people sitting in I never thought that I would enjoy strangers. Now, I was with my family, so that was really fantastic. We had a big table, but there were lots of other people there who are also, you know, who are eating and stuff. And I've got to say, and my family, they all came up from Philadelphia, so which is my hometown. That's where I was born and raised. But just the idea that we were all together there. And I pretty much kept my mask on, except when I was munching and chowing down. Other than that, I'm just used to it now. And I was just so it's a little bit, unnerving.
How do you feel?
But I think it'll be a good experience.
How did you feel being in a restaurant for the first time?
Oh, that's what I mean. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Being around total strangers, I had no idea how much I missed folks I didn't know. So it was really good. And there was one that I noticed as they were leaving. They were making a video of all of us as they were walking by. And so that was a little weird. But other than that, I didn't engage anybody else because we had enough people in our party. So, no, I didn't engage anybody else. But what I did notice, it was interesting. And my food was just fantastic, and I loved it. And I thought the service was great. So I had been there only one time before. But I would certainly recommend Dave & Buster's in Manhattan when you come. It's on 42nd in New York City. So Dave & Buster's, you owe me a check. And
there you go.
You know, so, yeah. But good stuff and really good things. So I know you're going to have a great time to spend on your birthday, and we certainly are celebrating with you. And Miss Terry and I will be celebrating in the summer months, July and August. We're Leos, and we're going to have Cosmic Carlos to give us an update on the Leo, how we're moving around with the Leo stuff. And he'll have to give you a big update, Harlem Will, on, you know, on your whole birthday thing. So that'll be nice. Well, listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll still get in with the Let Your Spirit Soar segment, see what you guys think. And we have some more interviews. We've got a lot of stuff still to come on this Wednesday morning. And thanks so much for being with us. We'll take a little bit of a commercial break. We'll be right back. So stay with us.
Well,
Just like the eyes are the window to the soul, the scalp is the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. The way to obtain it is with Stimulating Roots. Stimulating Roots will exfoliate and detoxify your scalp, promoting healthy hair growth. Stimulating Roots has a system to detoxify and grow your hair. Their shampoo combines menthol, camphor, and pink grapefruit essential oil to improve blood circulation in the scalp. Their conditioner, that stimulates, moisturizes, and hydrates the hair. The regeneration oil, that contains essential oils that work together to promote hair growth while calming an itchy, dry, and irritated scalp. Open the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. Awaken the senses to your scalp with Stimulating Roots. This is available at StimulatingRoots.com. That's StimulatingRoots, R-U-T-Z.com.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Broadcast Network. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, today we have a very special guest with us. Her name is Dr. Nazgul Ghamdush. Now, she is a research analyst at the Sentencing Project, where she conducts, synthesizes research on criminal justice policies and crime. And Dr. Ghamdush, I want to welcome you to the Hair Radio Broadcast Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to start by telling everybody that you wrote, you created this wonderful report called Race and Punishment, Racial Perceptions of Crime and Support for Punitive Policies. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about that and also let us know what the Sentencing Project is?
Sure, I would love to. So the Sentencing Project is a national nonprofit organization that's been engaged in research and advocacy on criminal justice issues for over 25 years. Mark Maurer is our executive director, and so a lot of folks might know of his work and his name from the work that he's done on these issues. And the work that I did here on this report called Race and Punishment, it's a play on the famous title Crime and Punishment, and the idea that we have that punishment is related to crime. And what we try to show in this report is that race actually plays a really big part in determining punishment. And what's important is a lot of people have shown that race, of course, you know, someone's race contributes a lot to whether or not they're arrested, what kind of sentence they get. We know about all of this, and I cover a lot of this research. I provide an overview of this research in the report. But what's interesting that I show here is that people's racial associations of crime, specifically the fact that a lot of white Americans, and I cite a lot of research supporting this, the fact that a lot of white Americans associate crime with blacks and Latinos means that they're more punitive. They support more punitive policies. And this actually affects punishment for everybody. It disproportionately leads to punishment for people of color, but it also makes it so that we have a really harsh criminal justice system for everybody that's processed in the system.
Why do you think that's the case?
So that's a good question. So there's two parts to it. So one part is, why is it that whites have this strong association of crime with people of color? So there are some surveys, for example, that ask people, well, what proportion of specific crimes, you know, burglaries and other kinds of violent crime or other kinds of property crime do you associate with African Americans? What percentage do you associate with Latinos? And when researchers do these surveys, they find that whites overestimate the actual crime rate for people of color when they compare their estimates to arrest rates. So it's about 20 or 30% more of violent crime that they attribute, that they think is committed by people of color than is actually committed by people of color. So so why does that happen? Well, first there's the fact that when you look especially at the most serious crimes, there is a disproportionate amount of crime that's committed by blacks and Latinos compared to the share of the population that they comprise. And this has to do with inequalities and injustices that extend to beyond our criminal justice system. So when you look at urban poverty and all the difficulties of living in those conditions, it's disproportionately people of color that live in those settings, and it's those kinds of life conditions that lead to some of the most serious kinds of violent crime. But even despite that, whites overestimate how much crime is committed by blacks and Latinos.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I totally, accept your research, and this is very, very interesting. But do you think that some of that overestimation has to do with the media, and I'm sure that it's that you've quite covered this as well in your research. But what role, if any, let me just ask it that way, has the media played in adding to this and exacerbating this issue? What role, if any, has the media played?
A really crucial role. So, what I mentioned was the most serious violent crimes. But then when you get to, for example, drug crimes, research shows that whites and people of color consume drugs at similar rates. We also know that people generally buy drugs from people of the same race and ethnicity as them. And so that would mean that if we were fairly enforcing and prosecuting and sentencing drug crimes, you would not have the majority of people in prison serving time for drug offenses. The majority of them should be white, but that's not the case right now. Their majority are people of color. And when people are asked, well, how much drug crime do you think is committed by people of color, they think it's a disproportionate amount than it actually is. And so a lot of that has to do with media representations, not just for drug crimes, but especially for violent crimes and property crimes. And so when researchers look at, for example, homicides that are reported in specific jurisdictions, like let's say in Cleveland, Ohio, one study looked at when you look at the newspaper or other researchers have looked at TV coverage of crime, or they found that a disproportionate amount of the crime that's reported is committed by people of color relative to the actual crime in that area. But in addition to that, it's not just the crime, the race, there's not just a disparity in the race of the suspect, there's also a big disparity in the race of the victim that's presented. So overwhelmingly, crimes that are reported on are crimes that are committed by people of color against whites, even though these are a very minority and extreme unusual set of crimes. Most crime that happens by people, are committed by people of one race against others of the same race as them. But something gets skewed, something gets transformed as you go from actual crime rates to what's reported in the media, and this gives people an exaggerated sense of black criminality and Hispanic criminality, and an exaggerated sense of the likelihood of white victimization.
Not to mention becoming desensitized and all of that. This is quite amazing. It really is. Well, first of all, if you just joined us, I'm Carrie Hines, and with us today is Dr. Nazgul Gandush. Now, she is a research analyst at the Sentencing Project, where she's done an extraordinary amount of research. Now, the report that we're talking about today is, the name of it is Race and Punishment, Racial Perceptions of Crime and Support for Punitive Policies. Now, as we mentioned, it's been covered extensively in the New York Times. Now with Mr. Mark Maurer, you've also written Fewer Prisoners, Less Crime, A Tale of Three States, and Can We Wait 88 Years to End Mass Incarceration? And now, you also edit the Sentencing Project's monthly Race and Justice newsletter. So I want to kind of, let's talk a little bit, Dr. Gandush, about how did you get involved with all of this? How did, what was it that triggered, this is something that, that I must get involved with?
That's a good question. So before coming to the Sentencing Project, I was a graduate student at UCLA in a PhD program in sociology, and trying to determine what to do, what kind of research to engage in for my dissertation, I wanted to focus on a topic that affected low-income people of color living in urban areas. And so I was trying to think about, you know, what would be a relevant topic, and it became glaringly obvious to me that one of the major issues that this population faces is incarceration. And so what I did for my project there was that I wanted to highlight the work that people who were impacted by incarceration were doing to challenge these policies. Because I had the sense at the time, and I think this is still true, that if you, you know, read about these issues, you get a really good sense of all of the problems and all of the causes of the problems that we have in the criminal justice system. And note there that I emphasize problems with the criminal justice system, not which are above and beyond problems that we have with crime, because a lot of the problems do not stem from crime. A lot of the excessive punishment that we have to do with criminal justice policy, not with crime rates. And so I wanted to document how people that were affected by these policies were reacting, to show that there isn't just this mass victimization, but people are actually, you know, working to challenge these policies and reform them. And so I documented the work of a group there, and when I was done with that research, I wanted to continue to work on these issues, and so that's how I ended up at the Sentencing Project. And so this is the, you know, the first big solo-authored report that I've done since I've been here.
Now, how has this report been received, in your opinion?
Oh, you know, I was nervous about the kinds of reception that it would get, but it's actually been overwhelmingly positive. So Charles Blow wrote about it in his column in the New York Times. David Cole wrote about it in The New Yorker, and these are, you know, both really influential thinkers, and gave their endorsement for the arguments that I make in the report. And what the report really tries to do is to tie together these, you know, very broad strands of research on criminal justice issues and on public opinion and on crime. And what one of the major points that it's been able to make is that racial perceptions of crime that are the focus of the report are a major reason why white Americans are more punitive than people of color, even though they experience less crime. So it's not the case that the people that are the strongest advocates for a harsh criminal justice system are the ones who are most likely to be affected by crime. They're not, because people who are most affected by crime, people who are seeing some of the devastating consequences of drug addiction, are the ones who are most likely to advocate prevention and treatment rather than punishment as a solution for these problems. And so this has received a really, you know, it's really kind of confirmed what a lot of people have suspected, and, you know, given them the tools that they need to make these arguments more strongly themselves.
Absolutely. I think for me, you know, just looking at, you know, the perception, where it just seems that when we watch television, and just to kind of, you know, a sidebar for, you know, all of your wonderful, wonderful research and this wonderful topic, but along the same line, when we look at television, it just doesn't seem that it's really representative of what's really happening in the world. You don't see, you know, you just see an overwhelmingly high number of folks who are not of color, you know, on television and in the media. And we just, and it just boggles the mind. It just, you know, we just can't seem to, you know, move the needle, you know, forward in terms of the media views on race and television perception. It seems like we're stuck back, you know, 40 years ago where television is. And I think it has a whole, you know, I think of all of the influencers, I think the media and the effects of the television and so forth, I think that has had the most, has done the greatest amount of damage, you know, and caused the necessity for your report.
Yeah, I think you're very right. I mean, you know, what I highlight in the report is how news coverage of crime is skewed and biased. I also mentioned briefly that drama, you know, dramatic series that cover crime issues really have contributed to making people very concerned about crime and believing that there's a really high crime rate and really focused on crime issues, even when we have periods of falling crime rates. But what you're suggesting also is that it's important to think about the underrepresentation of people of color in other areas of television that can counter these stereotypes, and I think that's a great point.
Well, first of all, thank you. I'd like to tell everyone how they can get their hands on this wonderful report of yours on the Race and Punishment Report. How can they find that report?
They can find it by going to our website, www.sentencingproject.org. So it's available there. They can also just Google the title, Race and Punishment, and that should pull it up for them.
Wonderful. And also, if they are looking to find out more about the Sentencing Project in general.
Yeah, so they could find out through the website, they're also interested in kind of keeping up with the new work that we're doing. They can follow us on Twitter. So our Twitter handle is @sentencingproj. And then my own Twitter handle, if they'd like to follow me, is @nazgolg.
Now I want to take a moment to talk and get your advice on this recent spate of what appears to be police brutality, or at least it seems like an uptick in our community. What is your take on, say, Ferguson?
So when I first, when I started writing this report, I thought a lot about how a lot of what I'm focusing on here is the sort of broad impact of these racial perceptions of crime, and that the broad impact is what we see going on in our criminal justice system, the expansive size of it, the fact that we have a higher incarceration rate than any of our peer countries by a magnitude of 5 or 10 times, the fact that we have such a disproportionate number of people of color in prison, 58% blacks and Latinos, compared to them comprising 30% of the general population. So that's sort of the widespread consequence of racial perceptions of crime and other factors as well. But a more narrow and more tragic and more acute consequence is when we hear about these instances where, we don't know yet exactly what's happened with Michael Brown, but this very suspicious circumstances. And it echoes a lot of other cases like Renisha McBride's, like Trayvon Martin's, Oscar Grant, so many other people that we could name, even going back to Rodney King or further, people are treated brutally. They're killed by police officers or even by just regular citizens when they're unarmed, when they're not posing a threat. And what's driving that? And that has, I think that is echoes the same ideas of what's in the report. What's driving that is a misconception of the level of risk that someone's facing because the person that's confronting them is African American. So it skews their risk assessment of the situation and leads them to shoot, to kill. And, this is, like you said, the causes of this are, to the extent that they're coming from the media, it's just so widespread, it's so instilled in our psyches, and it will take so much time and effort to address it and to root it out. But what I try to show in the report is that there's a lot of room for optimism, because a lot of the people that are, making decisions based on these kinds of skewed perspectives are people that are not overtly racist. Right, they would say that, especially within our criminal justice system, the judges, the prosecutors, our lawmakers, they don't explicitly endorse racial inequality. Right, we're not living in Jim Crow era, but what we're living in instead is in an era where most people support and endorse racial equality, but often because of the way that their biases unconsciously influence their work, they end up producing biased outcomes. So they end up treating whites more fairly than blacks. They end up assuming that whites are probably, you know, if they're in the criminal justice system, probably they made a mistake that got them here. So let's give them a second chance. But whereas if they see a similarly situated black defendant, they're more likely to think, oh, this person, you know, probably going to keep committing crime, right? Let's keep them locked up. So
exactly.
So the optimism here is that by being really explicit and talking about these issues and not just trusting that, well, I'm not a racist, so I'm sure everything is okay, but actually looking at, well, that's great that you want to not treat people unfairly, but let's actually look at the work that you're doing as a policymaker. Let's actually look at the work that you're doing as a criminal justice professional. And then, you know, even far beyond this, in whatever line of work that you're doing, actually looking at, well, do whites and blacks and Latinos and others that are coming to you, are they actually getting treated fairly? And not just because of your individual discretion, but what about your organizational policy? Are there rules in place that lead to people of color being discriminated against and having a worse shot than whites who come into your organization? So these are the kinds of questions that we try to pose. And at the end of the report, we describe within the criminal justice system a number of interventions that have been used in different jurisdictions where people who realize, okay, well, we can't just trust that things are working out fairly because there's a lot of evidence that they're not, but let's look specifically at what we're doing and try to identify the causes of the problem so that we can, you know, unroot it.
Okay. And what can we do, in your opinion, as just the regular, everyday folks out here who are combating these types of issues, you know, this big issue? Any advice for those of us who are, you know, completely affected by this?
Mm-hmm. I think that it's great to first do what you're doing right now, talk about it, get educated, help educate people that you know about these issues. And what this report tries to do is to provide everyone with the tools necessary to make these arguments and show that this isn't just a hunch. So one poll that I describe in the report mentions that it asks people, do you think blacks and whites are treated fairly in the criminal justice system? And the majority of African Americans say, no, we don't think African Americans get a fair shake. And only 25% of whites said that they don't think African Americans are treated unfairly. So there's a real misconception here among whites where they think that the system is fair, and yet it's definitive. The system is not treating people fairly. And so there needs to be a lot of education to realize, you know, this isn't about blame. This is just about assessing what problems are and trying to address them. So part of it is education. And then another part of it is supporting policies that are trying to scale down the criminal justice system and eliminate the unwarranted racial disparities in the justice system. So at the federal level, there's the Smarter Sentencing Act that's trying to reduce sentence lengths for federal prisoners. There are, if you can visit our website and sign up and let us know what state you're in, we'll notify you of campaigns going on in your state where, you know, either to scale back criminal justice sanctions or to reduce disparities, and you can help to become active on those things.
And let's share with everyone that website again.
Sure. It's www.sentencingproject.org.
Okay. Well, listen, I want to thank you, Dr. Kanish, for being with us. I mean, this is a wonderful report again. Let me just make sure everybody is aware. It's called Race and Punishment, Racial Perceptions of Crime and Support for Punitive Policies. We want to make sure that everybody is aware. And I really would encourage everyone to read this, regardless of your background. This is something that just a remarkable understanding of why we kind of are where we are here in America and what can be done about it. So, Dr. Ganesh, absolutely outstanding. Any final thoughts?
Let's see. My final thought, I guess, is to keep in mind this cause for optimism, that we're in a situation where it seems like lack of information and lack of education is the problem rather than a lack of commitment to values that we all endorse.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you again for being with us today on the Hair Radio Broadcast Network. I'm Carrie Hines. Dr. Nurse, thank you so much. Thank you for allowing us to take a quick look at this. And we'll have you back and really delve into some of the other wonderful aspects of your report. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders. And that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women. And Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com. Providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
Hi, I'm Carrie Hines, and I've been in the hair and beauty industry for 25 years. It's my pleasure and honor to introduce you to Carapi Shampoo and Carapi Conditioner, two unique all-natural hair products from Carrie Hines Hair Care, especially formulated to remedy any type of hair issue. And the biggest benefit of all is that Carapi Shampoo and Carapi Conditioner grows hair. Carrie Hines Hair Care is the very first African-American-based company to infuse hair care products with caffeine. Why caffeine? Well, many of you are aware that stimulating the scalp is truly what causes the hair follicles to awaken. We were most interested in developing a proprietary formula that works on all hair types, whether you have a relaxer or are a naturalista, and not wash away or strip the hair following a color treatment. We're thrilled at the amazing following of Carapi, and we thank you. Please register at Carapi.com and join our Carapi community at HairRadio.com. Again, I'm Carrie Hines. Thank you.
But radio commercials as much as they do television commercials?
Maybe more so.
How do you figure that?
Well, in television, your tube goes a minute just before the commercial comes on.
Yeah?
That serves as a warning device to millions of people that they have a split second to get out of the room.
I never thought of that.
In radio, an advertiser can just sort of sneak up on you without any warning.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you haven't noticed your car radio suddenly fading to black before the commercial, have you?
And not recently, no. But can't you still walk out when the radio commercial comes on?
Not at 60 miles an hour.
Hmm. Okay, but do you think you can really make me pay attention to a radio commercial?
I just did.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show on this Wednesday morning. We're live out of Brooklyn, New York, the world. It's our show number 548, and today's date is March 31st of 2021. And so real happy to have you guys with us. I joined on the line with our two fan contributors. You guys know them well already. We've got Harlem Will from Harlem, New York, from Manhattan. And also we have Miss Carrie out of Georgia. So we've got you guys with us this morning. We were, you know, you guys know, talking to the listeners, we have a lot of topics on and we run the spectrum. We don't always share everything online because some of them are real hot topics. So we save that for behind the scenes sometimes. And I have to say, today is no real departure from that. We were kind of having a behind off mic talk, and I think we were kind of talking about folks who are in the black community who we feel collectively that they don't really speak for the majority of folks. They may be conservative voices that speak to a few individuals. You know, one is my favorite topic. I saw all the memes out there. I've seen all the stories. And supposedly it was reported that the actress, I forget her last name, and you guys know who I'm talking about. Oh, Stacey Dash is her name, and she played in the movie clueless. That's really all I know about her in terms of she played in the movie and on the TV show. And that's the only professional credit that I can recall of hers, you know, and to be quite frank. And, you know, so outside of that, very pretty young lady, in my opinion, who presented and espoused a lot of views that rubbed the black community, again, in my opinion, the wrong way. So as it has turned out with all of these, you know, and she put out a whole bunch of comments that, folks have said that they found it very hurtful. I've read the comments. And Miss Stacy just supposedly or reportedly is now looking for forgiveness and wants to be kind of you know, she wants to get the black card back, so to speak. And so I just wanted to know, I think so. That's the way I'm kind of thinking about it. How do you feel about that? Should she be, should we accept her back? And along with these other folks who kind of, you know, alienate themselves. And it's not that, see, and I don't mix being a conservative or having a conservative viewpoint with some of the extreme behavior or the really odd rhetoric that some of these individuals are spewing. It's not it's not really, to me, being a conservative per se. So I look at it a little differently. But how do you guys feel? Do you think we should give her the card back? Miss Terry, would you be giving her that card back? Something tells me no.
That sounds like
Stacy, you got a long way. No way.
Terry is a true Atlanta
person. What does that mean? You know?
Because you are being very, you know how Southern Belles, I like to call the people for women from the South Southern Belles, because they're the
yes.
hospitality. Just spills through. You could tell she does not
yes.
want to say anything wrong. So
right,
like,
right.
No, no, you know.
And laughing, but she doesn't
yeah.
want to say anything.
I don't think that's it.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm looking at the headlines where they say she wants to be back, you know, wants to come back to the cookout, is what they say
yes.
online.
And Miss Terry, yes, and we're going to get you off that speaker now, Miss Terry. We can hear that speaker
oh, no.
voice down there.
I'm not on speaker right now.
Your surroundings give a good speaker quality. Well, listen, I'll tell you something. Yeah, that's okay, but I will tell you this. You will not give her the card, but what about you, Will Powers from Harlem? What would you do? Would you give Stacy a pass?
I don't think, and here's my thing, here's my perspective on it. I don't think we ever had the chance to take the card away from her. You know, she is a black American. She is an African American. She grew up here in the Bronx. This is who she is, and this just happens to be her persona, like where politically where she stands. I mean, she was a Democrat. It's showing on her Wikipedia page. She was a Democrat before 2012, but she transitioned over to the Republican Party in after 2012. But as far as in the black community, I don't know if we can actually take it away from her. She's one of those people we got to claim, like OJ and Candace Owens. Yeah, those are the blacks who think a little differently than us, you know? Like, they still had the same shared experience. Candace Owens went through something. Stacey Dash went through something, experienced some type of racial discrimination. They've all experienced it, but politically, this is just where they veer off from the majority of the community, and that's just something we gotta hold, but we have to accept they're different. They're still black.
Well, why do you
They're
think OJ
different.
Is different, though? You put OJ in that category. See, I wouldn't include OJ. I agree with what you said, from, you know, pretty much, but I don't think I would put OJ in that category.
Oh, OJ had the famous line that even Jay-Z had to quote in his song, which was about OJ. When he was asked about being African American, about being black, and OJ gave the famous line, "I'm not black, I'm OJ." And it was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
You know what?
So you don't even identify with the community.
Well, hold on. Let me say this. See, this is why I like being a little older, because we can give historical reference and because we were around. I remember all of that. And I remember OJ, you know, and I remember in being in media and show business and all this other stuff. And I remember when OJ was around, and you got to remember what their persona was. And yes, he was incredibly famous and recognized everywhere, and had just an extraordinary reputation and a great sportsman, as you know. However, and he was a very, good comedic actor, I thought, in the movies that he made. But when it came to his personal life and the part of his persona, it was kind of common knowledge that he was one who I don't even know how to say it politely. Who gravitated towards the other communities and so forth. And that's fine. That's everybody to each his own. But what was really, once this trial got underway and the whole thing went down, then it seemed as though, and not just him, but it seems, and I'm going to speak for myself at this point, not for any of the folks on the show necessarily, but I thought that it seems that we are always put in a position where certain black people, famous, well-known black people will say certain comments, and then when it comes, and listen, they might get a lot of appeal from the white community and support, and then what happens is they feel something happens and they no longer enjoy that support from the white community or other community, whatever, and then they want to come back, so to speak. Now, we're speaking monolithically. We're taking all the white folks and thinking that they speak and think a certain way. We're taking all the black folks and think that we speak and think a certain way. So we're just giving opinion, but the whole thing is, should we accept people who throw you under the bus and then want to come back to the community? That's really my question, and I don't know. I don't really consider OJ necessarily in that, because I think by going through what he went through, I think he was kind of welcomed back to the black, so to speak, side. That's just my opinion. I don't know. But I kind of remember him and the whole thing. And one side note, I went to Brentwood. I didn't go where this happened, but I was in Brentwood. That's where we started the Hair Radio Show. Well, I didn't start the Hair Radio
California.
Show there. Out in Los Angeles when I lived in L.A. I used to go to Brentwood, and we would hold interviews in Brentwood to hire people to work for my company. At the time, it was the Listening Group Publishing, and we used to do audio publishing for the children's stuff. And I would hold interviews in Brentwood, which is that area there, a beautiful area, by the way, a famous comedian's conference room. He didn't know we were there. it's a real crazy story. But there was a famous comedian that you might not know of, Will, and you might not know of him, Terry. But his name was George Carlin. And George Carlin.
Oh, I know George Carlin.
You know
George
Carlin? Okay.
Oh,
George
Carlin. I love George Carlin.
Yes, he was a very, 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 very famous Caucasian comedian. And so his production office was out in Los Angeles, like a little bit outside of the, like a little suburb area, and called Brentwood, which is where this all happened, and we would always go there. And so I remember that community, very well-to-do folks, and I don't know how to say, if you've never been to California, they've got some beautiful places out there with the well-to-do. You either are very rich or you are very poor. There's very few in between out there. And so it was a very nice thing. So that was my little Brentwood connection. But that was it. Never saw Brother OJ. So I was just curious about him fitting into that description. The only thing about the whole OJ thing that gets me, really, and I love that, to me, that he enjoyed the black support again. But the only thing that gets me about that part of it is that I didn't understand about stealing back your own trophies. You know, and doing anything that would potentially send you to jail, where you know that you had folks who really were just waiting for you to make any kind of, you drop a napkin on the street, they were going to haul you off to jail. So I didn't understand that. I mean, I understand that they were his items and he wanted them back for himself and he broke the law to do that. But I never understood maybe the appeal of, you have people who are waiting for your downfall. I don't know. Am I, you're the sports guy, Will Power. How do you feel about that?
That's your opinion.
Okay.
It's your opinion, but, from the general feel of it, like, I know my opinion happens to sit with a lot of their collective opinions, especially of my generation, and even from Jay's line, from Jay's song, The Story of O.J., where he mentioned, he talked about the many different aspects of the black community. And that's where, with O.J., that's where you get that he wanted to be all about this, entertainment, sports, having the leading man figure, just being that. But then it always rears its head when it comes down to, all right, do we share the same perspective? Are we looking at the same United States, the current events? Do we get that basic fundamental understanding of what just happened? And when he dropped the line, I'm not black, I'm OJ, that's a message sent right there, just as clear as when Michael Jordan, they asked him about politics, and he said, well, Republicans buy sneakers too. Back then, when Republicans were making a lot of they were making a lot of legislation that black folks questioned or didn't sit right with, he made that famous line as well, and it didn't sit well with the black community. But getting back to the original question, can we take back, can we allow them back into the cookout or take their black card from them? I don't think it was ever their card to take away from, take their card away. It was just a matter of, okay, you know how they act. You know how folks like this act. And it's something that we have to start recognizing. It's not a matter of cutting them off. Just recognizing these are black folks too, but they think like this. This is part of the American phenomenon of you have black folks who think like this, and then you have black folks who think like this. And so you just have, the community has to choose, do we mess with them? Do we not? But you can't say they take the black card away. It's just, we don't mess with them. They don't represent a lot of our values. They don't even want to go as far as saying, like, okay, Stacey Dash, and I'll end it right here. Stacey Dash did bring up something that could have been delved into a lot differently or a bit more interesting dive into the topic about having a Black History Month. Now, the way she presented it was terrible. Why do we have a Black History Month? But is there a White History Month? And it's like every other month except February. the point is, very true. We don't want it. Do black people want a historical month? Technically, from the groups I'm part of and the conversations I've been a part of, no, we don't want a month. We want it to be put in the education curriculum, period. Because we are part of the country. Now, does that mean we would have to eliminate a month of celebration only? It's a gray area. But as far as just adding the month, adding our curriculum, adding our contributions to the curriculum of education in America, Yes, that should be automatically. And then if you do that, well, then there's no need for a month because we're celebrated authentically. We're celebrated automatically because we're part of the lexicon of what America is. And that's where I felt she could have we could have even delved into that topic a little better, but she just she did the whole pandering thing. She did that whole spiel where, you know, she played this part, and this is where she's at right now. So we can't just we can't just take her black card away, but we could choose not to F with her. Excuse me. Excuse the language.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to avoid that kind of language, though, Will. But I do want to say that, and I think that I would definitely have stripped her of the black card for me. And would I return it back? I think that being black, we have really big hearts, and we really tend to be very forgiving people. I think that's why, you know, the world loves us so much. I would be forgiving. I would return her card, but I would give her some caution, you know, words of caution. And so, you know, and
you,
I would give her another opportunity. I could,
don't forget.
Yes. And like I said, I think she's a lovely lady, and I'd be happy and honored to be her friend and to really educate and re-educate and, you know, I wouldn't mind doing that. So I'm available, Miss Dash. Look me up.
Yeah, there you go. On the come on the yes. Carrie Hines Show, the radio.
There
radio
you go.
Show. You have a great discussion about it and everything. You know,
exactly.
Get back to our show yesterday. Education.
That's
especially
right.
Especially with her. Educate each other on it. We, you know, something that she didn't know. She may know something you don't know. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just put it out there.
And the whole thing is, you know, yes, are we left-leaning? Sure. I mean, it's not a secret. But, and
right.
I don't believe that everybody has to be a Democrat. I don't believe everybody, I think that everybody can be whatever you want to be.
Absolutely.
Whether if you're conservative, I mean, I'm totally welcoming and respect everybody's decision to be whatever they wish to be. So
right.
I do want to say that we just kind of, you know, I definitely am somebody who is in a long heritage of folks who represent the Democratic Party. I don't think that's a secret. So we keep the show. The show is what do they call those folks? It's independent. The show is not leaning toward, it leans whatever which way. And so we want to present all sides as best we can. We don't all hit the mark all the time, but we certainly try to present everybody's perspective. And I'm real proud of that. So if you guys are just tuning in, you've really been listening to an extended live talk this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show. I am Carrie Hines, and I've been really kind of on the line with two others out in different locations. And again, this is technology 2021 style, where we can do safe distancing. We were the kings of safe distancing, doing remote radio live on the air on this Wednesday morning, March 31st of 2021, with Harlem Will, which is just wonderful. You've been doing a great job mornings and contributing to our little team here. It's been really great to have you on board. And Ms. Terry, kind of chiming in. With a definite Southern Belle-ish down there out of Georgia area. And so it's great to have you as well, and I'm really, really happy about it. And I think this has been just fantastic. So, Ms. Terry, we will be getting into some of the hair talk likely tomorrow on Thursday. So we'll put together some ideas and things. I'm super hyped about it. And we'll be rolling out mid-show. We wanted to give you a chance to kind of get comfy cozy in the mid-show live talk, and then we are going in. It's a return to the hair talk with our own resident contributor, Miss Terry. So that'll be real good. I'm looking forward to it. What do you think, Miss Terry?
Oh, I can.
I think it's going to be great. I can't wait. We're ready to jump in on the hair thing.
And Will, what about you? You're about to say
something.
Yeah, I'm going to be picking both of your brains on the hair stuff because, again, it wasn't until I met Kerry Hines that I started thinking about beard oil. And then he introduced me to Kerapy.
Beard oil.
He introduced me to Kerapy, and I was like, wait a minute. There's beard oil?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a way to treat the beard. So, again, I'm going to be picking their brains. You guys are going to be hearing from me, Harlem Willpower, from the host of Kicking It with CC and Will. You're going to hear me pick their brains from Miss Terry to Kerry Hines, his renowned history, her renowned experience. I'm going to be delving into it and just asking a whole bunch of questions. So if I sound very lost on a lot of concepts and a lot of terms, just understand I am basic. I am as basic as they come. So I am learning as if I was 2 years old. But it's going to be fun. I'm really going to enjoy
talking
about it with you guys. Yeah,
we're
going to
get you together. We're going to get you together.
I think so. So we want to remind everybody, tomorrow on Thursday's show, in addition to some new hair talk, which we're really excited about, we do have some folks lined up, and we'll probably get you a nice new spotlight guest tomorrow in the third hour that we've been working on behind the scenes. And more memories as we march towards 550, our 550th live three-hour broadcast, which will be on Friday, coming up in a couple of days, on April 2nd of 2021. And I think we're planning something really special for you in the third hour on Friday. So I can't wait. I think we're going to have a great time. And that's kind of where we are. Now, if you have missed any part of today's broadcast, again, we've got you covered. Just go to Blog Talk, our actual platform, at www.blogtalkradio.com/hairradio, HAIRADIO. There's just one R when you put hair radio together. So real, real excited. Again, blogtalkradio.com/HAIRADIO. There you can listen to any of the archive broadcasts. So it's really, really cool. And we have, as we said, about 500, closing in on 550. So here, time to get ready to start the outro. Any last word of the day, Miss Terry? First of all, ask Will. Anything you want to chime in with, Will, before we say goodbye? Okay, Miss Terry, then you go ahead.
Yeah, just have a great day, everyone. Enjoy it. Make the best of it. Why are you laughing?
Okay. Well, that's pretty basic and pretty clear, and we love it. So great job. And Harlem Will, anything you want to add to that?
Two things. One, I love my Southern Belles. They are always polite.
Yes.
And I'll say, based on the things we talked about, I want to leave a quote of the day. I want to leave a quote in the air saying, forgive, but don't forget. And the reason why I say forgive is because to forgive for yourself so that you're able to move forward. But don't forget. Don't forget what happened. So forgive, but don't forget.
All right. Well, we will talk about that tomorrow on the next broadcast. That's 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern for another edition of the Hair Radio Show. Here is our daily outro. Thanks, everybody. It's that time again to bring this edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it doesn't have to end here. Visit our website at hairradio.com and find out more about today's program's guests. Now, I want to thank our amazing on-air team and fan contributors, and especially our great sponsors, which include FixYourFeet.com, Rugged Evolution Beard Care, Smooth Black Ink, Stimulating Roots, Prestige Book by Mr. Jarrell Glass. Now, don't forget to come meet all of us in person at our live hair and beauty show. It's a HairNationExpo.biz event called The Road to Healthy Hair. It's being held at the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on Saturday, August 21st,
2021, Sunday, August 22nd, 2021, and Monday, August 23rd, 2021. That's three big days. Now, the hours are from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tickets are on sale now at eventbrite.com. The event is for everyone. You don't have to be a hair or beauty professional to come to our show. Let us know if you'd like to be a vendor. Call us. Call our office at 862-277-0686. And again, that number is 862-277-0686. Now, if you're interested in being a guest or advertising on the Hair Radio Morning Show, give us a call. And for those of you who are just starting your career as an entrepreneur, you want to pick up your very own copy of How to Get Rich in the Hair Business. It's by me, Carrie Hines, and is on sale at Amazon.com. Start your new career as a Caribbean Hair Products Distributor, where you'll make money and meet interesting folks selling our hair care system. Caribbean Shampoo,